The Joe Rogan Experience.
Train by day, Joe Rogan podcast by night, all day.
Trevor Moore, ladies and gentlemen. Trevor walked in. The first thing he said is, I have one of these electronic cigarettes. Do you mind if I take a hit off of it? And just synchronicity, it was just when Jamie put together this thing that this dude sent me that you could kind of lift weights with.
That's insane.
You could fucking kill somebody with this for sure, because it's like, it's very heavy and there's all these sharp edges. For the folks at home that are not watching, they're just listening. This is so unnecessary. It must weigh, I would say, a pound, maybe two? Yeah. 2 pounds, maybe?
You need like a briefcase for it.
How much would you say that weighs, if you had a guess? Like a pound, maybe?
Yeah, more than that, I would feel like.
Yeah, maybe 2 pounds.
Yeah, this is the heaviest one of these I've ever seen.
So fucking stupid. And so you take, it's tobacco, and you press the button. The bottom has a button, and you take a, it's like, it doesn't even look like you're supposed to be sucking on that thing. It looks like an exhaust for a very small car. And you...
I mean, it might as well have, like, if it's going to be like that, it might as well have, like, a brass knuckles component.
Yeah,
so it could
right.
be, like, a self-defense weapon.
Yeah, like a key ring and, you know, I mean, like, right. Try getting that on a fucking plane. Like, try telling the people on the plane, ew, this is my vape. I'm a part of vape culture, and I like vaping, so I'm vaping this on a plane. A dude came up to me at the improv and was talking to me. He had one of those. Well, yours sounds cool. Yours has a weird tone to it. Yeah, Jamie said it sounded like
muted.
Darth Vader's voice.
Yeah. It's Darth Vader whispering. It's a quiet Darth Vader.
This doesn't really have much of a noise. Hey, play mine here. Mine is just it's just the sound of breathing. Yeah. And then a giant puff of smoke. Yours doesn't have as much smoke either.
No. I think my coils are bad. I've got to redo the coils.
Bad coils, man. What is you know, it just started off with those little fake cigarette jammies.
Yeah.
Like those blue cigarettes.
Well, I've been doing this since 2007.
You early adopter.
I know. Like, well, if they find out that something's wrong with these, I'm like toast. Like, you know, because it takes like 20 years to actually figure out if something's wrong with
right.
something.
Right, where they go, hey, whoa, this is, stop.
Yeah.
Everybody.
But when I started, you had to get them from England. Like,
really?
You would order it. My friend was a comic who was like, you know, I was smoking too much. And he was like, I just quit. I started doing this stuff. And you order it from England. And they would send it in like vials of the nicotine liquid. And they had all these gloves that would come with it. And it would say, they had this book that was like, if you get this on your hands and it absorbs in, it can give you a heart attack.
What the fuck,
so,
man?
Yeah, I don't know if it was they were just being like, you know, overcautious or whatever. But I was like, you know, every time I had to fill it, I was in the bathroom, like making sure there was people in my house. Like, all right, if I get this on my hands, run me to the hospital or something.
That's so ridiculous. That's so ridiculous. If you get it on your hand,
you'll die.
Well, how potent could that be?
So I don't know.
This stuff, the guy who sent it to me, he sent me little bottles of this jazz. This one says strawberry custard.
Yeah, that's the
really?
Thing now. It's all like, it's all fruit flavors. Like I do the like pipe tobacco flavored.
It might say strawberry custom. This is a shitty handwriting.
You're smoking on Crunchberry.
Crunchberry?
Yeah.
Like, what does that say? Does that say custom or custard?
Custard.
Custard.
Yeah.
Shitty handwriting. Why are you...
Strawberry custard.
You should think someone would print that out.
This is like the beta. This is the test.
Yeah, I'm not sure about this. Well, I like puffing on those little blue cigarettes, like, before I do stand-up. Because mm-hmm. I feel like it gives you, like... Because I know nicotine, like, it's one of the things I read in Stephen King's book on writing. It was a great book. Have you ever read it?
No.
It's Stephen King, sort of like, I think he calls it a memoir of the craft or something along those lines. But it's basically like talking all about his writing habits and the discipline of writing and, you know, what you should and shouldn't do and, you know, how he started out writing. And it's really, really inspiring. Great book. But one of the things in the book, he talks about cigarettes. And he just thought when he quit smoking cigarettes, it had an adverse effect on his writing.
Yeah.
Like he felt like his synapses didn't fire up as well. And I thought that was really interesting. So I started reading up on nicotine and nicotine's effect on the brain. And it's kind of a bit of a cognitive enhancer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a bit of a stimulant.
And it's one of the things, like one of the good things about nicotine that they don't really talk about that much
yeah.
is that they think that it staves off Alzheimer's.
That's crazy.
It's like, or there's some sort of correlation between smoking and less likely to get Alzheimer's.
Maybe the cancer is doing battle with the Alzheimer's disease. Cancer kills you first. So they go to war, and then your body survives because it's a battlefield.
Or that could be everyone dies before the age of where you usually get Alzheimer's.
Well, have you heard of that? They're doing things like they're shooting HIV into cancer, and it's killing cancer.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's all these weird, bizarre studies that they're doing now, or tests, where they're injecting, like, tumors and different, you know, really fucked up parts of your body with other diseases. And the other diseases are attacking the fucked up parts of your body.
But then do you have AIDS?
Don't worry about AIDS. You got cancer. You're going to die of cancer. But, like, people live with AIDS. Magic Johnson looks great. Well, it's not AIDS. It's HIV.
Right? HIV. But yeah. does that make you HIV positive?
I think it's an inert form of HIV.
Okay.
Allegedly. I don't know. Some people don't, you know, I mean, if you're going to die of cancer, if you had a choice between, like, pancreatic cancer or HIV, you should take HIV all day.
Right.
Because they got that thing pretty nailed down. Like, I have a friend who I've known for maybe 20 years, and he's been HIV positive for, like, most of that time. And he's great. He's fine. Yeah, he's fine. He's normal. I mean, you see him. He's always laughing, and there's nothing wrong with him.
Huh.
It's weird.
When was the turn for that? Was it, like...
I don't know.
It's like, last 10 years, right, where all of a sudden it's not as... Not to say it's not as big of a deal, but, like, it's a...
Certainly less of a
It's certainly less of a death sentence,
yeah.
You know?
I don't think it's a death sentence at all anymore. I mean, it's a testament to science.
Yeah.
These protease inhibitors and all these different things that they figured out how to stunt the progress of HIV. It's super controversial because there's been a lot of, like, weird correlations between the crushing of the immune system. Like, obviously... Everyone's in agreement that HIV, or most people are in agreement that HIV is what causes AIDS. But there's a bunch of people that say, well, it's that, maybe. But there's also this thing about partying that, like, in the gay community, especially, there's rampant drug abuse. Mm-hmm. Like, and that they, for whatever reason, people don't want to factor that in. And there was this guy that I had on the podcast that I think had a faulty connection, and he's actually a biologist at the University of Berkeley, University of California, Berkeley. His name is Peter Duisberg, and he's super controversial because he doesn't believe that HIV causes AIDS. He thinks that AIDS is, AIDS being immune deficiency syndrome, acquired immune deficiency syndrome, and he believes that it directly correlated with partying. Directly correlated with use of crystal meth, with poppers, amyl nitrate, crushing the immune system, and no other scientists support him. No credible scientists support him. So we had him on the podcast, and he was pretty convincing to an idiot like me, with zero medical or biological studying. But the more I talked to people who understand, no one wanted to debate him, which is really interesting. But I think it's kind of like debating a Holocaust denier.
It's a controversial, you don't want to...
You don't even want to give him any credit.
Yeah.
So he's got tenure at University of California, Berkeley, but he can't get any funding anymore. Nobody wants to have anything to do with him. And apparently he's done tremendous work with cancer. But because of this whole HIV-AIDS connection thing, he's kind of blackballed. And I was in touch with a lot of scientists after this was over. It was really interesting because, like, people got really upset with that podcast, with him on that podcast, and then me giving him a platform. And I'm like, look, man, the guy was in Spin Magazine. He's written a bunch of articles about this. I just wanted to hear what he had to say about it.
Yeah.
So having him on was pretty interesting. But I don't think he's right, but I think he has a point in that it's got to have an adverse effect on your body. And gay people like to party. I mean, it's just a fact, you know, and crystal meth use and amyl nitrate use is like, those are devastating to your immune system. So if you've already got something going on,
you're more susceptible.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't get factored in very often. And I think that's where Duisberg, because he kind of brings that up, I think, you know, it kind of gives the whole thing is a little bit cloudy because of that and because it doesn't get factored in. But that shit's super, super bad for your body.
HIV?
No. Partying. Partying. Yeah. All that, you know, the poppers and crystal meth and all that shit. It's just like, you know, gay people don't have kids. Or if they do have kids, it's rare. You know, they're out there having a good fucking time.
Yeah.
You know? They're just doing meth and banging each other. Getting sick.
I love hanging on a couple of conspiracy theory boards. Just because I'm like fascinated by it. Like, I just, that's one of my favorite things in the world are just conspiracy theories. Like, even ones I don't believe in, I just love them. Like, my favorite one ever is there's a whole bunch of people out there who actually think that Lady Gaga is JonBenet Ramsey.
Oh, good Lord.
Yeah. Like,
for real?
Yeah. Like, there's a whole bunch of people that think that. And so it's like those things where they put up the pictures where they show like the eye, like the eyes are the same, you know, distance across and like that kind of thing. But there's a whole group of people who don't think Magic Johnson ever had HIV. They think that it was a kind of almost a PR campaign to get awareness out.
Really?
Yeah. I don't believe that, but it's like it's a fascinating conspiracy theory that where people are just like, it was a huge problem. It was a problem in like inner cities, and he was the biggest guy at the time. He was kind of like this huge role model, and for somebody like him to come out and say, I have HIV, then like that it could be like a big kind of get awareness out kind of thing. That's like,
so he conspired.
Why would he do that? Yeah. But it's a conspiracy theory. That's
so ridiculous. Yeah. Well, he's one of the few guys that was reportedly heterosexual that got it. You know, like, did you ever see Sam Kinison's bit? Sam Kinison, you hear the crackle, ladies and gentlemen?
He's going in. I'll go in too and support solidarity.
Whoa.
Oh yeah. Synapses.
What was I saying? This stuff got
Sam Kinison.
Sam Kinison had a bit about it, you know, because he made fun of AIDS, and they say, Sam, you know, AIDS is a communicable disease. Heterosexuals die of it too. He goes, name one fucking guy. It's not our dance. You know, but really, there's not that many. There's a very few. I mean, when I was a kid, and I heard about Magic Johnson getting HIV, mm-hmm. I remember thinking, oh my God, everyone's going to have AIDS. And like maybe a year or two later, I got health insurance and I had to get an AIDS test. Mm-hmm. And I was fucking terrified just thinking of all the drunken, poor choices with no condom. And oh my goodness, it's going to happen. I have AIDS. I'm only 25. I have AIDS. Shit. And then I didn't have AIDS. So I was super psyched. But then I started looking into it. It's like this almost like very, very few heterosexual people that aren't intravenous drug users that get AIDS.
Yeah. I mean, I remember like when I was a kid, it was they treated it like it was, you know, you have sex without a condom, once you're going to get it.
It's going
like,
to happen.
It's just, it's an inevitable, yes. You know, kind of thing. And now, I think now they're kind of backing off that a little bit where it's like, well, it's actually not.
I think it's way more easy for a woman because obviously mm-hmm. the woman takes sperm into her body and her body absorbs it, or gay men, because you're a gay man, even you're taking it in your ass and you're not supposed to have cum in your ass.
It's on.
What's that? It's on? Yeah, oh, just sure. Sitting it down?
Yeah,
made it. Oh. Just, this stupid fucking thing is so heavy.
There's probably a safety on it. Mine has a safety on the bottom.
There's no safety on this piece of
shit. That spins.
Oh my God, it's so hot. Oh my God, if I licked that right now, if I tried to suck on it, it would probably burn. I can't even set it down. I gotta set it down sideways. You can't set this. For people at home that are listening, which is most people.
Let me see it.
You,
Oh, you're right. Jeez.
Yeah, the top of it is super hot.
See, there's a safety right here. So you spin that down. Oh, no, I'm taking it
off. That's not a safety. That's a battery.
Well, mine has a...
Yours is better.
Mine has a thing.
Don't do it like that. See, you're doing it again. Smoke started coming out of this. This thing, I'm trying to describe it. You know what it looks like? It looks like a spaceship in a shitty 1990s sci-fi movie. That's what it looks like. Like, that could be some sort of a spaceship.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Yeah.
It's fucking horrible. AIDS. Where were we?
AIDS.
Conspiracy theories, AIDS. Yeah, I don't remember what it was. I don't remember what we're talking about. But the JonBenet thing is interesting. When I was living in Colorado, I actually looked at her house, the house that she was killed in. I didn't look at it in person, mm-hmm. but it was for sale. And I was like, wow, what a beautiful house. Like, this is pretty reasonable for what it is. And they actually changed the street name. They changed the street name or changed the address.
Right.
One of those. And, like, to try to hide the fact that it was the house where JonBenet died.
But they have to disclose it, don't they?
They do have to disclose it, and that's the problem. They can't fucking sell it.
Yeah, who's going
to
buy that?
It's a beautiful house. It's really nice, and it's in a nice area of Boulder, but nobody wants that fucking house.
No. $10, I wouldn't buy it.
I'd buy it for $10.
Would you live in it? Would you sleep in it?
For a show, for a TV show, like a ghost show. It's fucked up, man. That whole story. So, like, I think that whole child pageant thing is one of the most fucked up things. When you see little kids with high heels and makeup on,
yeah,
dressed up like, you know, they're trying to get laid. It's just so crazy.
It's like, yeah, the worst parenting.
It's weird, man. We were in Dallas, and we were doing the improv, and the hotel that we were staying at was the exact same hotel where they were having one of these pageants. And it was me and I think Duncan and Joey, and we were walking around the hotel going, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
It was all little tiny kids, like five. Like I have a 4-year-old and I have a 6-year-old. So they were like my kid's age, but they were wearing high heels where they could barely walk, and they were fully dolled up. I mean, eyelashes, full makeup, war paint,
yeah,
teased up Texas style hair. Like little dresses. I mean, it was disgusting. It was disturbing. It was really, really weird.
Just the fact of just putting them into like a judging scenario at that age.
Yeah.
You know, kind of like, well, you weren't the best kid.
Yeah.
You know, you didn't, you know, everyone, you got up in front of everyone, but they liked this other kid better than you. So.
Yeah, psychologically.
Rattle that around in your brain for your whole life.
My daughter was playing softball or soccer rather for a while. And her nickname was Bruiser. Because my youngest one is, like, super aggressive. She's crazy. But she's really, like, she's a sweetie. But when it comes to things, she's like, ah! She loves, like, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And she has a Superman lunchbox. She's probably a lesbian. But I love her to death. But she's really athletic. Mm-hmm. And so she's only 4. And so they had her in soccer. And she's just scoring goals like crazy. The game starts. Boom, she scores the first goal. She runs with the ball. Boom, scores the second goal. I mean, she's like a little animal. And then the other team scored, and she started crying because the other team was cheering. She started crying like that. The family on the other side, the families, were cheering. And then she's like, I don't want to play anymore. And the coach is like, you got to go back out there and play. I'm like, you don't have to play. I go, it's just stupid. It's a ball going into the net. I go, if you're not enjoying it, don't do it.
Yeah.
I go, but you shouldn't worry about the other team like scoring. But I knew that she couldn't kind of internalize that.
Uh-huh.
So I said, this is no big deal. Like, I don't want to make it a big deal, because I think that sports, a lot of times parents, they fuck their kids up because they make like winning and losing this like huge deal, or playing, you got to get out there and you got to fucking play.
Yeah.
Figure that out when you're older. You know, when you're 4, you should be having fun, you know. And that's the coach was like sitting down with her trying to psych her out, and the coach is dumb as shit. So when she's sitting down, she's giving her this dumb psychology. I was like, whoa, stop. Don't teach my kid. Come here. Honey, it's all right. It's no big deal.
Yeah.
She's like, you've got to go out there, and you got to just go out there, and you get that score back, whatever they scored. If you feel bad, you got to go. No. Get out of here. No, you don't.
Yeah.
Have fun. Relax. Like, this is just supposed to be fun. So the idea that you could take someone that age and then judge them on their looks, that's mm-hmm. fucking insane. And then, you know, they have like a talent portion where they sing and they do little dances in their high heels. And it's like, what the fuck, man? Like, it's so unhealthy.
Who is the pedophile that invented this?
I think the
first guy who was like, I have an idea for a thing to do.
I think it's people that are just living through their kids, man.
Yeah.
You see that a lot with sports, you know. You really see that a lot with, you know, people that, like, it's usually fathers with their sons. Like, fathers, like really fuck their kids up because they're, like, super, some guys, you know, obviously. Some guys, like, fuck their kids up because they're super, super, super invested in their kid being successful. Mm-hmm. Like, I've seen kids not do well at certain sports and seen their fathers yelling at them. And, you know, you're talking about, like, 10-year-old kids, like, God damn, man. Like, you're going to... The only way this kid's ever going to get good at something is if he's rewarded for his hard work, and then if he gets a sort of an understanding of what is healthy and what is not healthy about competition.
Yeah.
And what's definitely not healthy is you putting everything on the line for this kid. Like, it's everything. Like, your love. Your love is invested in this kid knocking a ball into a net. This is fucking preposterous. Yeah. This is so goofy.
Dads just see that Tiger Woods money.
And you think that's what it is?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's probably column A, which is them trying to, you know, redo their, you know, what they wish they had done.
Yeah.
But then there's also like, my kid could be the greatest quarterback. My kid could be, you know.
Yeah. I think that could be in the future. Like, they might be looking at it that way. We got to get you one that doesn't make that noise.
Oh, sorry. I won't do it anymore.
It's okay. Just push the microphone to the side. But the audience is probably going, what the? People that have headphones on. Is that the headphones are the real issue.
Sorry.
Because sometimes we have these fight companion podcasts where we have a bunch of guys in here and we watch fights. Mm-hmm. And people start eating snacks. And they're eating like right into the microphone. And if you're listening, if you have headphones on, it's fucking maddening. But it's hard. You know, you're drinking and smoking pot and people forget and they start chewing. Anyway, JonBenet Ramsey, not a good place to buy a house.
Okay, AIDS is done. JonBenet Ramsey's done.
Yeah, we covered those super duper important things. The conspiracy. There's one that thinks they think that Bill Hicks and Alex Jones are the same person.
Oh, I've seen that. Yeah,
trust me. Yeah. I met both of them. They're different humans. Fucking Christ! People are so crazy. Could you imagine?
Like, why? Why would you do that?
I want to know, has anybody ever done that? Has anybody ever faked their own death?
Tupac. Andy Kaufman.
Yeah.
Andy Kaufman and Tupac live on an island somewhere.
Okay. What a boring fucking life, waiting to die of old age.
Yeah, but that's also maybe one of the best sitcoms ever. Tupac and Andy Kaufman alone on an island somewhere, like an odd couple.
How long before gay shit starts happening? How many months in?
It's got to be early.
Right away.
Yeah, right away.
Just fuck it. We're here on an island. Let's be honest. No one's rescuing us. I don't know of anyone that's ever faked their own death successfully. I know some people have tried. There was a guy that I remember. He was some business guy who apparently got busted swindling or something like that, and he faked his own death. But they caught him a few years later.
Yeah.
And then that guy that's in that movie, The Jinx, the show The Jinx.
Yeah.
That guy that, what is his name? Robert Durst. Yeah.
He didn't fake his death, did he?
No, but he disappeared and pretended that he was a woman.
Right.
He pretended he was a mute woman. Like, he put on a wig and dressed like a woman, and then, as a mute woman, murdered another guy, and then took off. Yeah. And that's like...
Whitey Bulger did it for a while.
That's right. He disappeared, but he didn't fake his own death.
No.
Yeah.
I heard, I don't know if this is true, I heard... And I don't remember where I heard it, so this could just be nonsense. But that what his plan was to do is, like, when he was going to get old and die, he was going to go out into the desert, dig a hole, and just basically, you know, kill himself in the hole so they never find him.
Like, Bulger?
You know, yeah. I don't know if that's true or not. I heard that.
You got to kill yourself where animals will eat you.
Right.
That's the move. What you should do, if anybody wants to kill themselves and not be found, go to Alberta. Go to Alberta, Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Go to where the bears are. Because there's sections of Alberta, Canada that are literally infested with black bears. And they have a few grizzlies up there as well, but I've never seen more bears in one place in my life. Like, in one day, you'll see 16 bears. Like, no bullshit.
Yeah.
And fucking big bears, 7-foot bears. And just blow your brains out. And
cover yourself with honey.
Yeah.
Because the bears eat honey, right?
And they'll eat you.
Yeah.
You'll be gone. They'll eat your bones. They'll eat everything. They'll eat every single piece of who you are. They'll shit out your teeth. And that'll be a wrap.
Wow.
And nobody will find you.
It's a good life hack.
Or the ocean. The ocean's probably the best.
Yeah.
They just are not going to find you.
If you go out far enough and just jump out.
Yeah, just start breathing water.
Mm-hmm.
You'll just fucking sink to the bottom. The odds of your body making it all the way to shore, not so good.
Yeah.
I mean, think about how goddamn big the ocean is. Who's going to find you?
Nobody.
That's probably a good move. The ocean's probably better than the bear move.
But it's more peaceful. It's serene.
I don't know about all that. It's terrifying. The ocean's peaceful in the day. At nighttime, it's fucking horrific.
Yeah. I went out sailing once in New York, and we went out like a little far, and then it got dark.
Ooh.
And we were trying to come back, and it was all of a sudden the waves got bigger, and it was actually, it's like a sailboat, so like really kind of, you know, with the old like wheel and everything, and actually like feeling like the strength of the waves trying to get back, and it was really fucking terrifying, like trying to get back to New York.
That's a crazy way to die, man. Your boat tips over.
Yeah.
You're trying to scramble and hope the boat stays afloat sideways and the water's cold.
Yeah.
Oh. My kitchen was getting fixed. There was some shit wrong with my kitchen. So we decided to rent a... We said, you know what we'll do? We'll rent a house on the water. You know, rent a house on the beach for a couple months. And I got barbecued one night. The first night we went there, I got super duper high.
Mm-hmm.
And in the daytime, it was beautiful. Like, you look out the window where you're eating breakfast, and it would just be ocean. Just like right there in the ocean. Like, wow, so pretty. But... at nighttime, that same view is horrifying because the sky is black and the water's black, and you keep hearing whoosh, whoosh, and it's like it reveals itself to you. Like, oh, you thought that this was like your playground, some beautiful thing. No, this is a fucking monster that could swallow up the whole city and not even know it.
Yeah.
Like the ocean could just swallow Los Angeles one day with one burp slash fart of the tectonic plates.
Or at least Malibu.
Malibu would be done. Santa Monica, done.
Yeah.
All that, the promenade, done. Just all those, the mall area with all the shops and people playing songs you don't want to hear out in the street. Whoosh. 100-foot-high waves just pouring in, covering everything for 3-4 miles deep. That's nothing. That's happened 100,000 fucking times in the course of the earth.
Yeah.
And we just set up houses there, dig them in, boom, boom. Little fucking posts.
Have a little wave wall.
I was terrified in that house, man. I barely stayed in it. I rented it for a few months, and I wanted to stay in my other house, my house with the fucked up kitchen. I was cooking on a hot plate. I was like, I feel more comfortable here.
Are you afraid of tsunamis?
I'm afraid of everything.
Yeah.
I'm afraid of everything. I'm afraid of asteroids, wolves.
Tsunamis are like the one...
Some birds.
One disaster for some reason I'm not afraid of.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know why. Like, my wife is terrified. That's like her biggest fear is tsunamis.
She's smart.
And like, whenever I see the tsunami, and I know this is naive, but whenever I look at the tsunami footage and stuff, I feel like I feel like I could get away. Like, but
I got so scared of tsunami, I spilled coffee all over my shirt. You really think you could get away?
I know it's stupid, and I probably couldn't, but I just have that kind of thought where I feel like if I had to pick a natural disaster, like I'm afraid of earthquakes, asteroids, but tsunamis, I would take that.
Do you imagine if you were right and you like a tsunami came and you survived and like 1,000 people dead? Trevor Moore, how did you survive? They're all pussies. How'd they not survive? No. Some fucking water. Just swim.
No, just be like, God. You know what? I kind of always deep down felt like I could do it, and, you know, it just turned out.
God told me I would be fine, and the water is just water. Just keep swimming, and you're fine. No. Have you ever been caught in an undertow?
Not a big one. Like, I go surfing and stuff, and, like, you know, I've never been caught in, like, I've been caught in one and been like, oh, I'm in an undertow, you know, but not a bad one. You know.
I've never been caught in a bad one either, but I got caught in one that was enough that freaked me the fuck out. I got caught in one, God, I don't remember where it was, but I remember, like, oh, this is what that is.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, pretty athletic. I'm in pretty good shape, but I was thinking, man, what if I was like an old lady or, you know, a young kid?
Yeah.
I was like, this is not good. Like, the water just started pulling me back, and it was pretty rapid. I was like, oh, fuck this. And so I just started, you got to kind of swim sideways.
Yeah, lateral. Through.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. Towards the shore. Greg Fitzsimmons had to rescue someone. He was on vacation with his family, and some woman got caught in the undertow, and she was screaming, and she was getting pulled out. And he looked around, and there was no lifeguard, there was no nothing, and she was just getting pulled. And so he was there with his fucking wife and his kids, and he went, holy shit. Okay, here we go. And he just jumped out there. And, you know, you got to, like, know how to hold on to people when you're saving them. He didn't know how to do that.
Because they're panicking and they're just trying to get to higher ground on top of you.
They'll pull you with them. They'll pull you with them. And she did not know how to do that. And so, like, you know, he barely made it.
Wow.
He barely made it and saved this woman. But that moment when you have to make that decision, do I risk my life to try to save some person? Because you might get to a point where you're like, oh, my God, I'm going to have to punch this chick in the face and swim by myself because she's going to drag me under.
Right.
Like, there's those weird moments that actually happen to people when they're trying to save someone. They realize, I'm going to die, too, because this person's an idiot. You know, they're maybe not an idiot, but they can't.
They're panicking.
They don't know how to deal with stress.
Mm-hmm.
Some people, given the exact same circumstance, just know how to stay calm and they'll be fine. And other people, they're just and they can't breathe. Like, you're like, breathe, breathe. They can't breathe. And you're like, oh, fucking Christ. Like, I can't teach you how to breathe here while we're both trying to swim for our lives. Fuck. And then his wife and his kids were watching this whole thing happen. And, you know, he kind of figured out how to grab her and swim to the shore with her. And fuck, that's some terrifying shit.
Yeah. That's, I mean, like, yeah, people, we were doing like river kind of rafting, not, I mean, just like kind of in a, like, you know, kind of like lazy river kind of stuff up in Cape Cod once, me and a bunch of friends. And this river comes out to the ocean. And when it came out to the ocean, there was one of our friends who doesn't swim. So I don't know why he was with us, but
Jesus.
Like, but he was on one of those inner tubes, just kind of like
did
tubing.
Did he have a life raft on too?
No, he was just kind of tubing, but it was like a river. It was a river.
We thought,
and so it got to the ocean, and it was the same kind of thing where it just, this river just shoots stuff you know, shoots the water out into the ocean really far. So he went all of a sudden way out. And we're all you know, back on the beach, and we're like, oh wait, holy shit, like Chris can't swim.
Oh god.
So we're like going and we see that he's panicking, and in his panic, what he did was he jumped off of the raft.
Oh no.
Because the raft was going out to ocean, and he just wanted to get back to the shore. So
but he doesn't know how to swim.
I know, but in the panic in that moment, like your brain god. Doesn't really make the right decisions.
So how'd you get him? What happened?
Well, he died. No. we had people that had to swim out and get him back.
Did you get the raft too?
I don't remember.
The raft
even
costs
remember.
Money, man.
Yeah, I don't remember what happened to the raft. Maybe not.
Oh fucking Christ! my friend Remy Warren. He was on a river once. He was right next to a river, and some stuff started. He talked about it on the podcast for folks listening to this. His version is going to be way better than mine. But he saw some stuff floating down the river, and then a guy face down, body floating down the river. And then he realized, holy shit, like this is like a capsized boat. It was freezing cold water. And then a woman hanging on for dear life, screaming. And he said, holy shit, here we go. And he just jumped in the river, and it was freezing cold water. And he realized, like, as he was jumping in, he's like, okay, I'm probably going to die. Because, this, you know, you get hypothermia really quickly.
Yeah.
It's essentially those rivers, they're glaciers. It's glaciers melting, and they create this river, and it's fucking freezing cold water in the mountain. And he's in this water, and it's not warm out either. It's cold out. And so he just dove in, and he's trying to save this woman. And he got lucky, and they both got lucky, and they figured out a way to grab a hold of something. And, you know, but he got a hold of her and then dragged her to shore. But he was pretty convinced as he jumped in, like, okay, this is it for me. It's been a fun life.
Wow. It's a good way to die, though, trying to save somebody else. That's pretty much,
that's
pretty heroic.
But if she dies, too, you're like, damn, I could have been lived and just watched her die.
Yeah.
I felt sad. And just started telling people, hey, man, don't raft. Shit's dangerous as fuck. Yeah, of all the ways to die, you know, that's a river rafting is a really terrifying one. If you see, like, when people, there was a reality show. I forget what reality show it was, but it never went to air because as they were filming, like, one of the first episodes, they overturned their canoe and got trapped under a rock. Like, the canoe overturned and the waves, or the current, rather, wedged them under a rock and they drowned.
You know,
In the pilot, yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah, this was years back. This was, like, right when Survivor was first taken off, before the internet really took hold as far as, like, social media and TMZ type shit, which they would just have a field day with this.
Yeah.
But back then it was just, you know, they hadn't figured out how to use the internet for trash yet.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But this person just got stuck. And I remember thinking that, like, okay, that's not something I ever want to be a part of. You don't ever want to get stuck in a freezing cold river with insanely powerful currents.
Yeah. Some people I've done it once. The river rafting kind of thing, like the whitewater kind of stuff, like this is not fun to me. Like it's very bumpy.
Scary.
It's scary. There's potential death everywhere.
People love thrills, man. They love it. Some people they love that rush, that adrenaline rush. Just, I don't know.
That's why I kind of have you ever done skydiving?
No.
Yeah.
Fuck that.
Yeah. Because I feel like if you do die skydiving, you know, it's always sad when people die, but it's like, you know, it's kind of, you don't get that. I mean, people be like, well,
yeah,
he jumped out of an airplane, you know.
I've had friends that are EMTs that have found people, you know. Got into the surface. They say their body's totally intact.
It's everything inside.
Outside.
Yeah.
Yeah, but everything inside, like your bones are like pushed up through your torso and just like, and you're just a bag of broken bones and destroyed organs.
Yeah.
Not good.
I read there's this article.
Jamie has this look on his face.
There's this article where they interviewed people who had actually fallen out of planes and lived.
Oh, God.
There's like only a handful, but they were trying to figure out how to do it. And the stories were crazy because there's this one guy who was an old guy that they interviewed who I guess was in World War II, and his plane just exploded before he had jumped out.
Whoa.
Kind of thing. And he fell. And they say that the way to do it is... and it's not like foolproof, but like the people who have survived, they kind of try to hit a tree and and you try to hit a tree as close to the middle as possible, but not the exact middle because that'll impale you. But you want to hit close to the trunk where the branches are the thickest. And you basically want to have all the branches break your fall on the way down. And you're going to be fucked up when, like, you hit the ground. But the people who have lived, a lot of them hit trees.
Wow. I heard a guy who lived who hit a barn. And apparently he went through the roof and into the hay. And somehow or another made it. But he was fucked up.
Yeah.
I mean, every bone broken, back broken, you know, all fucked up, legs broken. But lived somehow or another.
Yeah,
my friend Brian, his dad, he had worked with this guy, and the guy was trying to get him to skydive. And then, one day he went to the office, and the guy wasn't there. And he's like, "What happened? Where's Mike?" Or whatever the fuck his name was. I think it was actually a woman. And he was like, found out that the skydiving didn't go so well that weekend.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
Dead.
Yeah.
Skydiving.
I don't get that sport. Don't like that one.
Well, you know... My friend Steve Rinella said it best. He said, there's things that are fun while you're doing them, but they're not fun later. And I think skydiving is one of those, and roller coasters are one of those as well. They're fun while you're doing them, but they're not fun later. And then there's things that you do, like crazy, arduous hikes over mountains, and you get to the top, and you have this insanely beautiful view, and like you earn that view, and you know you're camping, it's freezing, and you know you're fucking hoofing it. But when it's all over, when you get together like weeks later and talk about that trip, like wow, you have these amazing memories. Like it was really cool.
Yeah.
But at the time, it was kind of brutal and arduous.
Would you ever do Everest?
Fuck that.
Yeah, that's. That's like what the suicide basically.
Well,
like,
you have to watch this new. It's out right now. I'm glad you brought this up. There's a Real Sports with Bryant Gumbel that's out right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing, and it's on the Sherpas, those fucking guys who have to do all the work.
Yeah.
Because they had all these experienced climbers who had summited at Everest like years and years ago, and they were talking about what it used to be like. You know, you used to carry your own stuff. You had a minimal amount of things. And now they have these companies that set it up, like these luxury tours, where these Sherpas, they carry like virtually anything you want, like whatever you want, whatever you need. So they have all these prepped meals, they have these tents, and inside these tents they have, you know, gourmet food and cots and all this stuff. And these Sherpas have to carry all this stuff. And it was sort of highlighting how insanely dangerous it is.
Yeah.
Like, there's only, you know, a few hundred Sherpas, and over the last couple of years, 25 of them have died in avalanches and ice falls. And the path that they take from base camp up through the mountains, like, within the first, you know, 100 yards or so, you're in dangerous territory.
Well, there's dead bodies all along the trail that they can't get them.
Yeah, you know, it's so cool.
If you die on the mountain, you stay on. You're part of the mountain for then on. There's like, there's pictures of the bodies like online, and there's one guy that just looks like he's like slumped over taking a nap, and that's what happened. Like he's still in his like parka and everything like that, but he just kind of, you know, when you get up that high, you get tired, so you're like, I'm just gonna rest for a second, and then you're there for the next 100-200 years,
including the first guy to ever climb Everest.
Is he?
You could see his body. Yeah, look at that guy.
Oh, that's the first guy?
No, that's one of them. Look at that fucking... That's so creepy, man. But the first guy to... That's the guy right there, the lower left. The lower left, that's the first guy to ever climb Everest.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
See, I feel like that's going to suck all the fun out of, no matter like how great the view is when you're walking up through just corpses, you know? Like, it's got to suck a little bit of the fun out of it.
Looks like someone chewed on his ass. Look, he's like got a hole in his ass. Like some birds came along. Fucking.
Yeah.
But he's white. White, frozen, solid, face planted. Yeah.
It's terrifying.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that is the body of the first guy. Because that's an iconic photo. But there's more than 100. More than 100 dead bodies. How many dead bodies, Jamie? Find that out. Mallory is the guy's name that died first, right? Isn't that his name?
Is this the first guy that ever tried it? Yeah.
I believe so. He was the first guy that ever did it, and then he died.
Yeah. On the way down?
Something like that. I don't know. Poor bastard.
I'm just going to wait for the virtual reality. They'll put a camera up there, and you can just put on goggles and go, what?
Won't mean anything.
It'll mean enough.
But if what the feeling of that thing is, you experience it like as you're walking, every fiber of your being is going, what the fuck are you doing? You got to get out of here, man.
Right.
This is dangerous. There's no air. It's 18 degrees below zero. You got a mile of walking, more than 200 dead bodies. Oh, my God. Some bodies even used as landmarks for other climbers. Fucking Christ. What? Jesus.
How many people have successfully done it?
A lot. That was the fucked up thing about this this real sports thing. As this guy was doing it, he was talking about how crowded the summit is now. When you go up there, like you could barely stand because so many people have summited. There's so many people up there with you. And then they showed the video of him doing it and all the people making it on the way up. And there was over 100 people on their way up the mountain. I mean, it was insane. It was a line for Disneyland. Like, I'm not kidding.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Look at that. Look at that. Look at that. Look at all those fucking people. That's insane. Wow. Look at the line, the upper right-hand corner. Look at the line. Look at that fucking line.
Now, you can only do it, like, there's like a 1 week a year or something, right?
Is it a
small window, isn't it? It's like a month or two?
I'm not sure.
Where the weather is okay to do it?
I'm not sure, but they, you know, people die all the time doing it.
Yeah.
And so these companies have sort of capitalized, as one of the things they were highlighting, they've capitalized on two things. One, this desire of all these rich douchebags to, you know, like, I'm an adventurer. Mm-hmm. I've summited Everest.
I conquered business. Yeah. Now I've conquered the highest mountain in the world.
People love saying things like that. I've summited Everest. Mm-hmm. You know, whoa, John, I'm so much more impressed with you now. But the Sherpas, it was really, 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 really depressing because a lot of them come from this one town that's like, you know, halfway up the mountain. And the town has been essentially the same way. You can't even call it a town. It's like a village. It's a day's walk to buy food. They have to walk for a day. And this family, this mother and her son, were just mourning the death of her husband and the kid's father. And it's just, he was a Sherpa, first day on the job, first time doing it. You know, they needed money to try to get out of this village. And they make like $5,000 a year. But
that's the equivalent
difficult.
To like, that'll go for a year. Like probably,
yeah, probably like way more than anybody makes up there.
I just wonder why, I mean, so it's like I'm sure it's like a pretty much, that's the town business. Like it's a Sherpa community kind of thing.
Well, also they're uniquely like genetically qualified for the job.
They're living up there.
They live up there. Right. They're used to climbing all the time. They're insanely fit. Because their bodies are used to like very low oxygen, very high altitude, so they can do things that other people just—it's like super difficult for like a person like us that lives here in LA. You know, we're at sea level. To go up there, we'd be like, "Fuck!" You know, it takes a long time for your body to adapt.
Yeah.
Like I lived in Colorado for a while, and we were living at 8,500 feet above sea level, which is like 3,000 feet above Boulder, and it was just going upstairs was rough.
Yeah.
These fucking people are at like, what, 20,000 feet more even? I think like the summit is something like 29,000 feet above sea level. So it's like essentially like almost as high as a jet. Like when a jet is flying over Vegas. Like,
that's crazy.
Fuck.
Yeah.
What's insane. Fuck, man? There's no air. And they do it with tanks too. That's the other thing. They do it with oxygen tanks.
Yeah.
Pussies.
We did a show in Aspen, an Aspen Comedy Festival, and there's just like it was a sketch show, a lot of running around on the thing. Yeah. But I had to have an oxygen tank backstage just because, like, from the amount of like running around, like after the first show, I was like, I can't breathe. Like,
yeah,
I can't imagine being up at jet level.
I did Aspen. I did the Comedy Festival. Probably the same year you were there. You guys, we didn't even introduce Trevor. He's from the Whitest Kids You Know. Very, very famous sketch troupe. You probably have seen a lot of their stuff online, a lot of their sketches online. But we were doing the Aspen Comedy Festival, I want to say it was like 2003 or something like that. It was way back in the day. And it was with, I was with Lewis Black. We were on a show together. And they had oxygen waiting for him when he got off stage. Like they have a tank right there, a little mask. Like you're sucking oxygen like right after you get off, you know, because Lewis does that thing where he gets his fingers going and he gets very excited. And, you know, you got no air. There's no fucking air up there.
Yeah. Well, I remember when we got there, they were saying, like, if anyone's feeling faint or anything like that, we have oxygen for everybody. And I was like, that's, you know, I'm not going to need that.
Pussies.
And then, like, 24 hours in, I was like, where is the oxygen tanks?
Well, they sell it. They sell, like, tubes that you could bring with you. Like looks like a can of hairspray or something, or shaving cream. It's got, like, a little mask thing.
Yep.
But Yeah, that's nothing though. I mean, that's nothing compared to the altitude that these people are at. So
it's probably the same kind
basically,
of thing. It's probably the same thing.
What I did was basically like going to the moon on a bike. Yeah, Aspen is a freaky town, isn't it?
Yeah, the sidewalks are heated. Yeah. I thought that was weird. Like,
it's so rich. There's so much money up there. It's so stupid.
Well, they have to bus everybody, like, because there's a McDonald's there and all of that. And everyone who works there, anyone who works in any of those shops has to be bussed in from like an hour down the mountain, like, to work there. Like, it's, there's no one who works there lives there.
No, you could never afford it.
Yeah.
Do they even have apartments? I mean, they must have some, right?
I don't know.
I don't remember seeing any, but I remember seeing some stupid fucking expensive houses up there. It's a weird, like, rich people paradise. You know, like the stores, were like, they have, like, a Nobu up there, like, super expensive sushi place. Like, how are you getting fish up here? this ain't nowhere near the fucking ocean.
Yeah.
Like, Aspen is pretty high up there. It's, like, 8,000 feet, right? Something like that.
It's...
Seems like it. It's a goofy airport, too.
That's a horrible airport.
You have to fly, like, straight up, like...
Yeah. The year we went, I don't think planes were coming in. Because it was snowing, and so or they called it off or something like that.
Same airport. With my year.
So then it was basically everyone had to drive up the thing, and that was terrifying. Because then the roads, like, you know, if there's nobody driving on the road for like 5 minutes, the road's gone.
Yeah,
you know,
covered with snow.
Yeah,
yeah. We landed in Denver, and then they bussed us up, and it took hours.
Yeah,
and you're going on these winding roads in a you don't even know this driver. Like, he might be crazy.
Yeah.
Like, how'd you get this job? I mean, can I talk to you? You're the guy driving? Like, it's your life is on the line. You're on mountains.
You know? On the way up, there's all these buses just on the side of the road. They've just been frozen there because you can't go get them. Like, on the way up to the Aspen Comedy Festival, there's just littered with frozen comedians on buses.
It was a goofy place to do comedy, too, because, like, the audiences, they either had to live in Aspen or they had to also, like, fly in for it. And then they kind of realized somewhere along the line, oh, executives just sort of built this festival so they could ski.
Yeah, it's a party.
Yeah. So, like, when I was up there, I remember thinking, like, this is, like, very different from the Montreal Comedy Festival, where the Montreal Comedy Festival, it really did seem like it was all about the shows. The shows were, like, an afterthought in Aspen. And so they just canceled it. Like, it doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
And then they brought it to Vegas for a while. And then we're like, well, this is even worse. And then there's no more festival.
Yeah.
I mean, does HBO even have a comedy festival anymore?
I don't think they do.
I don't think they do either.
Which is a shame, because I thought it was a fun festival.
It's great.
But, yeah, I guess they...
I enjoyed it. I ski now, but back then I didn't ski. So I just was there just kind of having fun, going, this is a weird place to have a festival. Like, why would you have a festival? And then I kind of, like, sort of pieced it together. Like, oh, you fuckers just like skiing.
Yeah.
You'd see all the agents and everyone.
That's why Sundance is.
Yeah. They'd all have their shit with them. All their skiing shit. I was like, this is fucking bizarre. Like, you guys have, like, this is an afterthought.
Yeah.
That's Hollywood, you know? The skiing.
Skiing terrifies me.
Does it?
Yeah. I put that up there with, well, I don't know. You can hit a tree and then, you know.
Well, you know what the thing is, man? Just don't go on a super tough course. You know? That's the thing about skiing. Like, if you're going to ski, like, everybody wants to go, like, crazy. Skiing's fun for me when I'm in control of it. Like, you know, they have, like, black courses and blue. Like, blue is, like, fairly easy, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, was it like
bunny
blue?
Slopes?
Yeah, it was like, well, blue's not bunny. Blue's pretty, like, I was in, Park City, Utah this year, and the blue's not easy. Like, blue gets weird. Like, there's some spots where, like, whoa, this is, and I think green is, like, maybe blue is harder than green or green is harder than blue, but whatever it is, I got to the one right before black, and I was like, whoa, this is kind of crazy. You kind of figure it out. You just kind of take, like, steep turns left and right to try to regulate your speed.
Yeah.
But while I was doing it, there were some motherfuckers that were just experts that were flying by me, just, whee! Just people that are just speed demons. They just really know how to do it. And if they fuck up, ooh. You know, some of those guys are going, they're probably going like 50 miles an hour or something.
It's no room for error.
No. Also, I was with my kids, and it freaked me out. I was like, what if some uncoordinated dummy plows into one of my kids when they're trying to learn how to ski?
Right.
That's a potential danger.
But when I was a kid, the first time I ever went skiing, I took the little lessons, you know, that you take your first time skiing. And then we were there for, it was like a Christmas thing. My family was there for like a week. So like by the second or third day, I'm like, I want to try the Black Diamond kind of thing.
God,
geez. And my dad was like, fine. Like he was just kind of like, he, I think he was like, he'll really learn a lesson or something. Like, yeah, go for it. So I took the lift up to the thing. And nobody said anything. Like, it was totally, everyone was like, all right, this kid's going to, you know, eat shit. And it took me hours to get down because I couldn't, you know, stay up for more than, you know, 50 yards at a time without just falling. Because it's just the slope, the pitch was just so much that I just would just keep tumbling. And I'm like crying, trying to walk down this Black Diamond thing while people are like flying past me.
Oh, God. Did you tell your dad when you got to the bottom?
Yeah, I was like, I hate skiing.
Did he say, I wanted you to learn a lesson, son? Take that Black Diamond. How about a double Black Diamond, pussy? Yeah, the moguls are kind of crazy. We were watching people doing a Black Diamond mogul, which for people who don't know what skiing is, like it's like massive bumps. Mm-hmm. Like the people like the bumps, which I'm real confused. I didn't understand why they would like.
You get sick air.
Is that what it is?
I think isn't that, is it kind of, you're trying to get air off of the bumps, aren't you?
I guess you kind of do. I mean, don't jump too high because you're kind of going back and forth. But we were going over it in the lift, and we were watching these people just go left and right and just hopping up and bouncing, and it's the actual ground gets like etched in like this crisscross crosshatching pattern from people just going left and right and left and right over these crazy fucking bumps. And you're like, man, there's not a lot of room for error there.
Yeah.
If you don't know what you're doing and you just jumped in like you did just a little too quick,
you're in the trees.
Yeah. What's safer, skiing or snowboarding? What's easier to do?
I don't know. Can you go as fast on a snowboard as you can on skis? I feel like you go faster on skis, but I'm talking out my ass. But
you do go faster?
Yeah, you can go like 100 miles an hour. Well, not 100.
On a snowboard?
You can go straight down like the downhill alpine skiing on the Olympics. They go really fast.
Yeah.
7 miles an hour. They can't get that fast on a snowboard.
Aubrey's friends with that guy, Bodie Miller, who's an Olympic gold medalist. I watched him in the Olympics because they were... You know, the Olympics was happening when Aubrey was over at my house. We watched it while it was going live. And that motherfucker flies. You know, when you're watching, like, Olympic gold medalists going down these things, like, the speed is just unfathomable.
Yeah.
Like, you got to think that at some point in time, like, if you wipe out, like, he just wiped out recently, almost severed his leg. Like, he hit something and tore his,
jeez,
almost tore the meat off of his leg in this accident. Like, a pretty severe, might even be, like, a career-ending injury. Like, I think he hit a fence or something.
Holy shit.
Yeah, fuck.
Or he just hit snow, but if that's as fast as he was going, the snow cut his leg off.
I think he hit a fence. My friend Steve was on the U.S. ski team, and he's had, I want to be conservative when I say this, but I think I'm wrong. I think I'm undershooting it. He's had 28 knee surgeries. Well, he actually had his knees resurfaced. Here, I'll show you a picture. You want to freak out? He doesn't have any cartilage on his knee anymore.
How old is he?
Steve's in his 50s. I've known him since I was a kid. Let me see if I can find this image. It's going to freak you out. I'll pull it up here. I don't know if I can. What's that?
He's looking up at the screen.
Oh, yeah, you're looking up at the screen.
Yeah.
Hold on, let me.
The record is actually 156 miles an hour.
Oh, my
God. On skiing?
God.
Average speed, 40 to 100.
40 to 100 is average?
Yeah.
See, I never want to be going 156 miles an hour.
Yeah, you're smart, dude. Okay, look at this image. I'm going to pull this. Hold on. I'll give it to you. I'm off my laptop. That's my friend's knee. Look at that. That's the inside
Holy
of his
shit.
Knee.
He so, what, is it metal?
Yeah, so they put metal over the top of his knee.
That's got to feel terrible when it gets cold.
He's a bad motherfucker. He would never complain about anything. This guy's an animal. He doesn't give a shit. He's got fake meniscus. You see that little white thing there? That's an artificial piece of meniscus that is a pad in between the ball and socket. The caps of his knees, where, you know, normally you have cartilage. The cartilage is so worn away that he has these, it looks like they're chrome, like steel caps that cover over the top of the bone. And then, you know, it just sort of rolls steel to steel. And that's a knee replacement. He doesn't have that. No, he just has his knee resurfaced. Because knee replacement is like for people that have like their ligaments destroyed.
My mom had knee replacement. She had both knees done at the same time.
Fuck.
Where they chop your legs off, basically. And then they put robot knees in. And then you basically can't walk for a couple months. And
good Lord.
Yeah.
Fuck, man.
And they give you a whole bunch of Vicodin and send you home.
Yeah. The amazing thing is the hips. They saw the top off. They give you a fake hip. They like it's attached to like a screw that go like saw the top of your femur off, and this fake hip screws right in there, and then you just start walking around like you're walking around within like hours.
Really?
Of surgery. Yeah.
Hip replacement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had a guy that was yeah. There's the hip. There's the fake hip. Trevor, if you hear that sound, that's Trevor sucking on his
I did
robot
it away from
dick.
The mic.
Well, look at that, how they do it. They literally saw the top of your bone off and put this fake thing in there, this fake ball and socket.
That looks cool, though.
Oh, look at it. It's from Aspen. That's hilarious. The picture that you pull up is from Aspen. I mean, how many people that are super rich blow their hips out from skiing all the time? Probably a lot.
Or just get that done cosmetically. It kind of be like...
Just be beautiful.
Yeah, kind of cyborgy.
I want to have better hips. But you see the top where it shows how deep it goes into the femur?
Yeah.
The screw, like up above that, Jamie? Above and to the right? You see that? Yeah, right there. Like, look at that. That's what happens. They put that fucking steel thing. Graham Hancock had it, and he came on the podcast 6 weeks later. He was walking around like nothing. Like, I had no idea. You know, he goes, well, I had my hip replaced. I said, when? He goes, 6 weeks ago. I go, get the fuck out of here. He was walking around like... There was nothing wrong.
Now, how long? I know with the knee stuff, like it lasts like 20 years or something. And so then you got to do it again, like 20 years or so.
How long did it take her to recover where she could walk?
It was like a couple months, I think. Because she did both at once. Like most of the times you do one.
And then you do
another one later, but she just did them both. One.
She just said, fuck it, let's just suffer once.
Yeah, she's like a school teacher. So she was like, I got this summer open. Let me just get them both done out of the way. And like...
God. What was wrong with her knees that she had to do that?
I think just the cartilage wore down. Like, it wasn't an injury or anything. It was just kind of wear and tear.
That's one of the reasons why I don't trust certain doctors, because there's other ways to handle that. First of all, they're doing these stem cell injections now in people's knees where they're regenerating cartilage. You know, obviously, that's not an option once they chop your fucking legs off and put a fake knee in.
Right.
But doctors love doing that. They love doing surgery. You know, I had a back injury, and I talked to a doctor, and he's like, well, I'm going to fuse your discs. You know, there's no other way, you know, this and that, and we're going to chop it out. And now I'm fine. Like, I sought out a bunch of alternative methods, and I did this thing called Regenikine, this blood spinning procedure that reduces inflammation. I did a lot of stretching and yoga and a lot of strengthening, and it's fine now.
Yeah.
Like, I could have listened to this asshole, and I'd have my discs fused right now.
And what is, I don't know what that means. Like, what is that? Like,
cut the soft part in between the bones. Like, your spinal column is a series of bones, and in between those bones are discs, which is like sort of like a tough bag of like jelly. And that bag of jelly a lot of times gets herniated where it pokes out, and because of trauma, it'll start sticking into the nerve and it causes pain. That's where sciatic comes from.
Mm-hmm.
You know that term, like sciatica?
Yeah.
People go, oh, I have a sciatic issue. Well, you know what that really means? That really means you have a bulging disc. It means your bulging disc is poking into a very specific area of your spinal column, a specific area of your nerves that affects where your leg is.
Mm-hmm.
And so it can cause atrophy in your leg, which I've had friends that have had that issue. It can cause like some pretty severe lower back pain and leg pain, like through your butt, down your hamstring, all the way down, like shooting down your leg. So what they want to do is cut that meat out, that soft, cushy part, and then they drop it down and screw the bones together. So now you have one part of your spine that just doesn't move.
So you can't, your
exactly,
range
it doesn't
of
articulate
motion.
The same way. Yeah. Huh. Now they've developed the same guy that invented, in the same country, in Germany, they're doing things in Europe that they're just not doing in America yet, for whatever reason. And one of the things they're doing is they're replacing the discs with artificial discs that articulate. They move around. much like your actual the actual stuff that's in between your bones do. So instead of fusing it and having this one stiff, rigid area, which actually is can be really problematic because it puts pressure, additional mechanical pressure on the above disc and the below disc. Mm-hmm. So oftentimes people wind up having multiple discs fused, and you got like one stiff fucking back, and you're walking around like this, and you're shorter. Like it makes you shorter. It makes you have all sorts of problems, like mechanical problems, the way your body, because your body's like going, what the fuck is going on? Why are we built different now?
Yeah.
Like, well, how come I can't move my neck anymore? Why is it all? But it's really common. People get it done all the time. They fuse the discs. And you don't always have to. You know, there's other ways around it. But a lot of doctors just want to start cutting you. They just don't want to start doing... I mean, there's very ethical doctors, and there's sometimes where they have to do it. There's sometimes when, like, you know, you're really fucked up, man. We have to do surgery to open up your nerve pathway because your arms are atrophying, mm-hmm. which is really common with people that have neck injuries. They'll have like, one arm that, like, shrivels up. Like, it's not getting any nerves. Like, the nerves aren't firing anymore because they're being impinged by this this disc, this bulging disc. Scary, scary shit.
Yeah.
But doctors just want to fucking cut you up, man. They make money doing it.
Yeah.
Sure about that doctor that was arrested recently? He was arrested because he was lying to patients and telling them they had cancer and giving them chemotherapy for profit.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
fuck, man.
Yeah.
Intentionally misdiagnosing people and then giving them fucking chemotherapy.
How did they catch him?
I don't know, man.
Someone That's got a second. Question. A bunch of people got a second opinion, and the kind of
maybe, right?
Yeah.
Like, what? Can't what? You don't have cancer. Yeah. You're not even fat.
That's got to be a weird turn when you're a doctor and you're just like, you know, you're like, I'm just gonna be a bad doctor, like, you know, because you can't. I mean, you have to know you're a bad doctor at that point. You're like, I'm a bad guy, you know.
Yeah. Some people have a way of dancing around reality. You know, there's a book called "Dead Doctors Don't Lie." This guy, Dr. Joel Wallach, who's kind of a eccentric character, and basically the premise of a lot of what his book is about how few doctors really understand nutrition, and they understand the impact of nutrition on the body and mineral deficiencies that people have that you would treat in like livestock, like in animals. A lot of times when the animals develop issues, they change the diet and mm-hmm. give them minerals, and that they don't do that with people. And he found that particularly fascinating because I think he started out as a veterinarian. And one of the things he was talking about is that how many doctors abuse drugs because they can get them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's really easy for doctors to get drugs. And, you know, he details like this one story of this guy who was in the middle of an operation and stepped away and shot cocaine into his body and had a fucking heart attack and died. So he was in like a storage room dead while this person was cut open in the middle of surgery. And you know, they had to try to go look for him, and they found him dead. Like, but you would think that, you know, when you're a doctor, you have access to, you know, prescriptions and you can get a hold of some medicine. I mean, I'm sure it's probably more tightly regulated today than it was in years past.
Yeah. I mean, I'd heard that about dentists. I heard dentists, you know, a lot of, well, dentists have the highest rate of depression for any occupation, the highest amount of suicide for any occupation.
Really?
Yeah, and a lot of people think that it's because people hate going to the dentist. Like, it's kind of a universal. Nobody wants to go to the dentist, so they kind of put it off. It's like they only go when they have to, like they're in pain. So every single person that a dentist sees every day of their professional life is people who are having the worst day of their year, and they're wow. dreading it. So there's this energy of everyone coming in and being like, I'm not happy to see you. I'm stressed out. And that kind of wears on these dentists. So they have the highest suicide rate. And I've heard that because of that, there's a lot of abuse of, because they have the drugs too, but there's less oversight than at a hospital. Like, it's their own private practice. So they just have all this stuff. So there's a lot of abuse there.
That totally makes sense. Yeah. I didn't
so I'm trying to find a dentist friend.
I've always felt that was the case with cops. Like, cops, cops have very high suicide rates as well. I think a lot of it is PTSD. They're always seeing trauma. Mm-hmm. They see these, you know, but they're also dealing with people that don't want to see them, like, all the time.
Yeah.
Most of the time when you see a cop, you're like, oh, this fucking cop.
Yeah.
The cops are here. Great. You know, so they just deal with that all the time.
Yeah. Plus, they have a gun on their belt. So, like, yeah. You know, that's... It could be, you know, it's got to be more in your mind if the gun is constantly there.
Just stick it in your mouth?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, I bet they're probably like number one for shooting themselves.
Yeah.
You know, it's easy. It's right there.
Yeah.
Being a cop has got to suck. I don't think anybody's qualified to be a cop. I really don't. Not for more than like an hour, you know?
Yeah. Have you ever done a ride-along?
No. No.
I haven't either. That'd be fascinating, though. Anyone can do it, right?
Yeah, it's, pretty sure.
I feel like you can just call the police station and do a ride-along. I bet it'd be fascinating.
What if you do that and the cops get killed and you're in the back seat? In what?
And you're just like, I'm just on a ride-along.
I'm not a cop. I am white, and I'm so sorry for that. I'm not interested. It's like I don't want to go to war either. I don't want to do a ride-along in Afghanistan either.
No.
I have a friend who just got back from that. He's filming a documentary on Afghanistan, and he was embedded with these troops for over a month. And he came back shell-shocked.
Really?
Yeah. He came back just whacked out. And
that's from 1 month.
Yeah. Well, he was a little more than a month, I want to say, like maybe 6 weeks. But he came back, and he was talking about it, and his experience. Well, he's a hunter, and he's like, there's this really creepy similarity that I didn't take into consideration, that these guys are hunting people. I mean, that's really what they're doing. I mean, they're going after like certain, you know, quote unquote insurgents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you give them some interesting names like insurgents. Like, we never heard insurgents before this war. When the fuck did you ever hear? Did they say insurgents during? Yeah. You know, they said the Viet Cong during Vietnam, right? You know, they said the Nazis and the Japs during World War II.
Yeah.
Now it's insurgents. It's like this real way of making things sanitized. But he said essentially, like, he realized, like, right away, like, whoa, this is like hunting. Like, these guys they're not going after a deer so they could eat it. They're going after people. And they knew their behavior patterns. They knew how to set traps for them. They knew where they would be. And they knew how to sneak up on them.
Yeah.
And they had like all these strategies, like very similar to the way you would hunt a deer. Like, okay, this is the path the deer goes into. What we're going to do is get, you know, upwind of them or downwind of them so that the wind comes to us, they can't smell us. And like all this crazy shit they were doing to try to avoid being seen, and really similar to hunting an animal.
That's crazy.
Mm. Yeah, he was pretty fucked up. He came back. He was a little weirded. He had an idea in his head of what it was going to be. You know, he said, well, you know, go over there, do a documentary, sort of like, he wanted to, you know, kind of show how difficult it was, show the real side of war, but, you know, sort of honor these people that are over there. He's got a kind of a simplistic way of looking at things, too. You know, fighting for our freedom. He's one of those guys that says shit that you go, okay, what does that mean?
Right.
And then they just don't expand. Like, it's just like fighting for our freedom. Are you sure? exactly what they're doing? Like people that are telling them to do that, are they doing it because they want freedom? Or is there other ulterior motives? Have you looked into this at all? He didn't. You know, it's just like very surface.
American Sniper.
But, exactly. Yeah. But when he came back, man, he had a fucking completely different idea about it. He was really, he had a very realistic portrayal of war when he came back. It was a fucking eye-opener. Like, he was like, this is a clusterfuck.
Yeah.
It was a scary clusterfuck, and it's not good by any stretch of the imagination. And there's no way to win this fucking thing. You're over in Afghanistan. It's all mountains. There's no towns. There's Kabul. That's one city. Everything else is warlords that are trapped up in the mountains. And get this, the way they get the warlords to tell the Taliban, they give them Viagra.
Viagra?
Viagra's the best.
Huh.
You give them guns, you give them money, but they got guns. They got some money.
Yeah.
You know.
And they got opium everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
Viagra's the one thing that's not local.
They need Viagra because a lot of these guys are like in their 60s and they got like 30 wives. And these bitches are complaining, man.
Wow.
You know? Can't fuck them once a day.
Yeah.
Once a month.
Should be a Viagra commercial.
Yeah.
Red, white, and blue flying behind the Viagra. It's keeping you safe.
It's one of the main ways they get these guys to rat on the Taliban.
That's crazy.
Do you even call it the Taliban anymore, or do they call it Al-Qaeda? They don't even talk about Al-Qaeda.
It's ISIS now.
Is it the same people?
They're their offshoot. They're a branch of Al-Qaeda, yeah.
Is it like, you know, Van Halen with David Lee Roth was totally different than Van Halen with Sammy Hagar?
Yeah.
Is that what ISIS is like? It's just like a totally different offshoot of the original band.
Yeah.
We're getting the band back together. It's ISIL now, right? ISIL?
ISIL.
Yeah. It was ISIS, and now it's the Islamic State. I've heard that, too.
Yeah, they started at ISIS, and then they changed it to ISIL. Wasn't testing well.
It wasn't testing well.
Yeah, they rebranded.
Testing. Testing is adorable. Take a bunch of people when you're doing a television show. You take a bunch of people that don't want to be there. They're getting paid, and then you play a show for them
in Vegas.
And then, yeah,
it's usually.
Is it really usually?
Yeah,
in Vegas?
They go to Vegas, and they'll grab people off the street, and they'll be like, "Would you like to see some TV shows that are about to come out?" And like, you'll get like $20 off TGI Fridays, kind of thing like that. And people are like, "Well, because Vegas is like where you get a cross section of everyone from all across the country."
Right.
So they find that, you know, that you can kind of get people from Iowa, you can get people from Florida in this one like city, so you get like a good cross sheet of what people are going to think of a show.
That's hilarious. That's hilarious. Vegas. That's a weird place to do it, man. And it's also like, who are these people? Like, you can't just get a random group of people and ask them about a show, especially if the show is specific, you know, like of a specific genre.
Yeah.
You know, you just get a bunch of rednecks and you play, you know, some sophisticated show for them. Like, this is gay. Like,
yeah. Well, it's people who are on vacation who have run out of things to do, and they'll just do anything anyone's like offer. Like, if you're on vacation at Vegas or something, and then somebody was like, "Do you want to watch like 5 TV shows that you've never heard of?" You'd be like, "No."
Yeah. I just think the idea of testing is ridiculous anyway. This is the way you test it. Put it on the air.
Yeah.
You know, let creative people come up with it. Let the comedians or the writers or whoever, you know, whatever kind of show it is, let them come up with it, put it together, and go, "Okay, we like it. Let's put this thing on TV."
Yeah.
And find, you know, trust your instincts on shit. You don't have to bring it to some, "Well, we brought it to a random group of people, and they'd like a wacky neighbor."
Yeah.
How come there's no wacky neighbor, man?
Well, like what Amazon does now is they just throw them up online.
Yeah.
And they just see, all right, which one's got the most, you know, which one do people watch more?
Amazon's got so much goddamn money, they can do that, right?
Yeah. They've got drone money.
They do.
They're sending drones.
They've delivered shit with drones.
They're never
going to
do that. They're never going to do that.
I think that was like a publicity stunt.
It's never going to happen.
You don't think so?
No, because like if Amazon started sending drones, there would be guys that had 8 drones in their garage. The drones trying to get back to Amazon's headquarters. Like, people are going to steal them. They're going to, like, you know,
shoot them down, take your packages too.
Yeah, like, and there's power lines. How are they going to get? You know,
well, they can see where they're going.
People would steal them. I'd steal one.
Would you steal a drone?
Yeah, it'd be funny.
How rude!
What an Amazon drone? It's not hurting anyone.
If it has a GPS on it, they find it. Like, find a phone. They could find your iPhone. You don't think they could find your fucking GPS?
Well, I'd put it somewhere.
You'd put it somewhere.
No, I wouldn't keep it in my house.
Mm.
I lived in a town in Charlottesville. I lived in Charlottesville, Virginia when I grew up, which is where Dave Matthews was from. And it was like when Dave Matthews was huge. And so it was like a big thing in my town. And like one thing that he did to like give back to the community that he wanted to do was he did this thing where he got a whole bunch of bicycles. And they painted them like orange, and they put them all around town. And they're like, "These are Dave Matthews is putting all these bikes around, and they're free. You can get one, ride it to where you need to go, leave it there, and then you know, it's just a community bicycle kind of thing." And within like 2 months, they were all gone. Like all
2 months,
all gone. And then for
how many bikes?
It was a lot. It was like hundreds of bikes. They're all gone. And then for like years, like, cause I was like in like it was like 1920, like, you know, kind of, and you go to house parties, and every house party you would go to, there'd be one of the Dave Matthews bikes on the wall. And they're like, "I got one of Dave's bikes." You know, you can only have what the people will let you have. And that's why they won't have the Amazon drones, because people are going
to
steal them.
That's funny. Yeah. But that you would have to really steal. That's not something you could borrow. Amazon's not going to let you borrow their drones.
No, but it's got to come to your house, right? To drop off a package.
Yeah, but I think it just drops it off and then takes off. I don't think it waits for you to release it. You know, I think it just drops it off and then that's it.
Well, you have your buddy order something. Then you go up on the roof with a baseball bat. You wait for that fucker.
Imagine if you died because you were trying to hit a fucking drone and you slipped and fell off your roof and broke your neck. That would be a sad funeral. This stupid fuck. He died trying to hit a home run off a drone. God. I don't know what we're going to be doing in a few years, but I have a feeling that within the next couple of decades, it's not even going to involve things being delivered. I think it's going to involve 3D printing.
Yeah.
I think that's the big one.
Like you have a subscription to like Apple or something like that, and then you know, you have their account, and then they just make your iPod in your living room kind of thing.
Yeah. You know how like you order like a movie on iTunes, you say, hey, I want to watch Taken or whatever, mm-hmm. and you just click it. And then you start downloading and then you start watching it. Yeah. I think that's what it's going to be like. I want a new pair of Converse Chucks.
Right.
You know, and then I wonder if they'll be able to 3D print cloth. That's an interesting question.
Probably.
Why not, right?
Yeah.
I don't know, because it's woven. Like, that's the whole idea of cloth. Is that.
Well, maybe like some sort of like, what are those ShamWow kind of cloths? They're not that comfortable, but.
Is that a chamois? Like a chamois is a skin of an animal. Like it's a super absorbent skin of an animal. But I'm sure they have synthetic.
I think that whatever ShamWow was, I don't think it was an animal.
What is that? 3D printer for fabrics. Well, Jamie just fucking answered our question.
Crazy.
How does that shit work?
You know what's crazy is when.
Look at this.
When the 3D printing like takes off is like, you know what happened with like music and like the entertainment where all of a sudden people could like BitTorrent everything. You're going to have that happen to every single industry.
Oh,
because
yeah.
All of a sudden you can BitTorrent an iPhone. You can that whole thing, like you wouldn't download a car, would you? And be like, well, if it was possible, yes, a lot of people would. And you will be able to do it.
Yeah, that argument for piracy, I had Paul Stanley from Kiss in, who's like really adamant that it's stealing. And I was like, you know, it's piracy. I'm like,
it's making a copy.
Is it? Yeah, it's the original still there. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not really stealing, you know, but he's used to being rich. And he wants to stay rich, and he wants to keep making millions of dollars. But he was talking about how the industry just disappeared. And I was like, well, it's kind of, but see, my argument was like, yeah, but the radio always existed, and you always had radio. And you play the music on radio, and that's what made the music famous. And then people would go out and buy the CD, and you'd make millions. And then they would go out and tour, and you'd make more millions.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now one part of that's missing.
Right.
The buying it is missing. People don't really want to buy it anymore. But they still want to tour.
They'll still buy T-shirts. That's always where money came from anyway. It's T-shirts. Like, you know, like these people tour, and they, you know... I mean, like, back in, like, the old Sun Records days and everything, they were on the road all the time, you know, putting out these singles and then making all their money touring. I just got to go back to that.
Well, I think the record companies are fucked way more than the artists.
Yeah.
Because that's why the record companies, they're creating these, like, really fucking, like, strange deals, especially, like, with young artists. They get talked into these really creepy deals where, you know, they get locked up for X amount of years, and they're really, like, just strange contracts, like, that established artists would never agree to, and then you have to try to get out of them once you get to a certain point. But they're just trying to figure out a way to lock down these artists and try to suck money out of them where, I mean, what do they have to offer these days? They don't really have anything. It used to be like you needed a record company to release your record and to get you on the radio. But now the radio doesn't mean shit.
No. Everyone just wants to get in like a TV show or like in a commercial now. I mean, that's like the payday. Yeah, it's just getting like your song played at the end of some MTV show or getting like your song played in the background of a commercial. That's like the new, you know.
Yeah. Or just getting it like, okay, like how about that Gangnam Style guy? Like, that guy's in a weird spot because everybody knows you ain't going to make more than one of those, dude.
Like, right.
You got that one song where no one knows what the fuck you're singing.
Yeah.
And people go, oh, it's kind of catchy. And how many of those can you make, man? And do people want to go see you live?
Maybe. Well, he's a big guy.
In Korea?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, he was a star before that over there. And this one just, I think, went international. But the size, how big that song was, he doesn't need to have another one.
You think so?
I think he'll be able to coast off that for a while.
You think? How much money do you think they make? Jamie's like, he's fine.
Plus that, I mean, that was on so many commercials, too. Mm-hmm. And then, like, 10 years from now, there'll be a nostalgia for it. It'll come back.
Really? Oh, like Rick Astley?
Yeah.
Rick Roll?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I don't know. You got to think that. Like, for most artists, that's not going to happen, right? Maybe for him. But for most artists, you got a hit, you got a few songs that people are into, and then you're hoping they're going to come see you live.
Yeah.
That's, like, the big thing.
Yeah.
But with Paul Stanley, he was just saying that you used to be able to make a lot of money off the sales of the records, and now it doesn't exist anymore because of illegal downloads. But they must be making some money, right, off of like iTunes and shit.
Yeah, I think. I mean, I'm sure it was better.
Yeah.
for like the few people that like you know were in this Paul Stanley level, you know, kind of thing. But
I don't know.
Flip side of that is that there's a lot of smaller bands that can, you know, get heard now. Like, you know, the internet's been great for, like, small music. I mean, you have a platform, like, you know, I guess, yeah, I don't know.
I think it broke up the monopoly. Broke up that industry, which is a really creepy industry. Go ahead, dude. It's all right.
I'm going back here.
He's got that robot dick. He's got to suck. Can't help it.
Have you watched that movie Artifact about 30 Seconds to Mars? And
I
their,
did.
What
is it?
Record label battle.
That's the Jared Leto thing. Yep, is that how you say it? Leto? Leto?
It's an insane movie talking exactly about what you're talking about. Yeah. A really famous band that went on tour, sold out everything, and they came back and the record label said they still owe them $1 million. And they're like, what the fuck? How? And it's a whole 3-year battle, and the documentary shows everything. Lawyer talks. And
wow. And meanwhile, no one's talking about that documentary. It's not like...
Yeah, it hasn't. I mean, they still ended up at the end of the movie. I don't want to spoil it or anything.
Right.
But, like, they're still making music right now. This is a couple years ago when the movie was made.
Did you ever see the piece that Courtney Love wrote on the music business?
Yeah.
That sort of highlights how crazy it is. Like, how much money goes to the record company versus how much goes to the artist. But, again, that was before the internet kind of, like, took the legs out from under that business.
Yeah. Napster.
For comics, it's giant. We never made any money off of CDs anyway. I mean, you make a little bit. But the real money was always in doing clubs and doing theaters and stuff like that. So the internet is just awesome promotion for that. Like, way better than anything else before. Way better than radio. Way better than putting out a CD.
Yeah.
There's nothing better than the internet.
I mean, guys, that always blows my mind when I try to think about, like, what, you know, would you have a mailing list? You know, at the end of a show, you put out a pad of a paper and, you know, like write down, you know, I'll send out a mailing list every year, let you know. I remember when I was a kid, I'd go to the record store and just check to see if the bands that I like had new albums out. Because there was no way to know. Like, you know, you would just go and sometimes, you know, you'd check multiple times a year and then you'd be like, oh,
that's right. Yeah. You know, where they would have like a poster up.
Yeah.
Like, coming September 3rd, the new, you know, Bon Jovi. Did you hear? You know, and then the radio would have to tell you. This information was really hard to get back then, man. It's really hard to get anything. You know, you got like, I remember I was in the Kiss Army. You know, you'd get like a Kiss fan thing in the mail when I was a kid. And you'd get like this. But, I don't even remember them saying tour dates. They'd just tell you about the band, you know.
Yeah.
And you get this like real superficial version of who they are. It's just so much different now. So much different. You can't be like this mysterious hidden person that lives in a castle, Marilyn Manson style, on the top of the hill. Like, you kind of like, they know you now, man. If they don't know you, they're not going to, it's just the whole animal's different. People are different. Like, I think human beings, I think we're so used to it. It's hard for us to really conceptualize. It's hard for us to really kind of appreciate how much different just interacting with human beings is today in 2015 as opposed to like 1985.
Well, I was, we were shooting Whitest Kids when the iPhone came out. And we were in production, you know, and I remember like me and a guy, Zach from the troupe, would direct everything. So I remember directing, you know, we were like mid-season and the day before the iPhone came out, you know, everyone would kind of be talking, you know, in between takes. Like, everyone would be on set, like, you know, PAs, like, you know, like the costume department. Everyone would kind of be, like, joking around and stuff like that. And then the iPhone came out at midnight, and, like, you know, it was a huge thing. Everybody went in line. A lot of people got it. And the next day, everybody was just staring at the iPhone. And it was this thing where I was like, well, it's crazy, because I bought one, too. And I was like, it's just crazy what this thing can do. And everybody's so fascinated with what this can do. But we never went back. It never went back. I thought it was just going to be, like, a couple days where everyone's just, you know, staring at this thing. And it was like, that was the dividing point. It changed after that. And now, you know, just interacting with people is just completely different.
Well, then the social media really took off because you took it everywhere with you. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like, well, when I get home, then I will check my social media. I'll check my MySpace page or whatever. No, it wasn't that. It was like you're on the road. You're everywhere you go. You're eating dinner. You know, you're in your car at stoplights. You're looking at your Twitter feed.
Like, yeah.
You know, you see people that are just glued to it. They can't have a conversation. I have some people that come on the podcast, and we're in the middle of conversations, and then you start, yeah, totally. They're not even listening. They're not even paying attention. They're just looking at their fucking phone. Like, they can't help it, man. They can't help it. There's this weird, like, pull. It just, maybe there's some interesting info. And most of the time, there's not. Most of the time, it's not. It's like you're searching for a present. Like, maybe there's one more Christmas present under that tree. Mm-hmm. You just got to find that present. But it's not there. It's very rare that, like, your obsession pays off when you're, like, staring at social media.
Yeah.
It's very rare that it was, like, worth the look.
We're just looking to see what your friends are doing or mm-hmm. thinking. But, yeah. like, you don't care what your friends are doing or thinking. Like,
it's cool to call you.
Yeah.
You know, hey, man, something fucking crazy happened.
Yeah.
But now it's like you're constantly looking for more data. And I think the newness of it is like really attractive to us in a way that we have a really hard time controlling, you know?
Or it's just the beginning of, it's metamorphosis, it's the beginning of evolution, like to us becoming like a synthetic kind of non-carbon-based, you know, silicone-based being kind of thing. And, you know, then we put nanobots in ourselves and, you know, it's just the first step of that, you know, of evolving.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's most definitely what it is. There was an article recently, I think yesterday, about this guy who's dying of cancer, leukemia, I believe. And he's going to be the first person that they inject nanobots into.
Wow.
Yeah, it's begun. These tiny little robots, like without it, he's going to die. So let's give it a shot.
Yeah, and I've heard that's supposed to be the norm within like 15 years.
What if this dude becomes Dr. Manhattan? Just like,
that'd be awesome.
Figures out everything. Starts glowing, he's blue, he sees dick everywhere he goes, he doesn't care. I think human beings will definitely have some sort of a weird symbiotic relationship with computers. Within the next like decade, there'll be implants that you'll be able to get data directly downloaded into your brain. I mean, I think it's only a matter of time before they do that.
Well, they're saying, I mean, I was reading something where they're saying the nanobots thing is going to be commonplace within like 15 years, where, you know, you inject them into you and then it just constantly is doing readouts like, oh, your platelets are low. Oh, your white blood cells are low. Like, and it's just telling like your doctor so you can, you know, keep up with everything.
Kurzweil believes within the next few decades, you're going to have nanobots that are going to allow you to hold your breath for over an hour. They're going to give you these nanobots that somehow or another do something with maybe artificial blood cells or something like that, where they can hold and carry oxygen through your system so well that you'll be able to take a deep breath, jump to the bottom of the pool, and sit there for an hour like a regular person.
That's fucking dope.
It's fucking crazy,
That's
man.
Awesome.
No more worrying about drowning for your friend.
Yeah.
That dummy. Just hold his breath. Hold your breath and walk back. Just get on the ground, on the bottom of the ocean. Walk home.
That's awesome.
Well, there's already experiments where they've transmitted words from one person to another person in their brain through the internet.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, they transmitted a word from one person. Jamie, pull that up because it's kind of difficult to describe exactly what they did. But somehow or another, like, say if you're thinking Christmas tree,
mm-hmm.
you know, you actually can send that word to me through the internet, and somehow or another, I receive it. I'm not sure I understand it.
Yeah, is it visualized?
I don't know.
Like,
look at this. Scientists transmit thoughts from one brain to another. International team of scientists have succeeded in transmitting the thoughts of one individual into the brain of a second person located thousands of miles away. Combining some of the latest technological marvels with the long arm of the internet is thought to be the first time the two brains have communicated with each other directly over long distance without the sender having to utter a single word. Two greetings, hola and ciao. Oh, can't even do it in America? How come you can't use English, you fucking queers? Made the historic trip from India to France, where they were received and spoken by a researcher who was blindfolded and equipped with earplugs. Wow. Scientists want to ensure that the receiver knew what his colleague 5,000 miles away was thinking because of the brain-to-brain transmission, not because of some other cue. That's amazing. So somehow or another, those two words were transmitted, and they knew what those two words were thousands of miles. I don't get it, man.
Yeah.
But
sounds good.
Right. But
I like it.
If you told me 30 years ago that they were going to be able to send a video through the mail, I'd be like, what are you even talking about? Or through the air on a phone.
Yeah.
I'd be like, what? What's a video? Like, you're going to be able to send a video? That you could, you're watching it on what?
Like
you're watching
movie?
It on TV?
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Hold on. So you're going to a TV show, and it's going to be on what? You're going to hold on to something? Like in Star Trek, they didn't even have fucking, if you look at those stupid phones that they had, they didn't have buttons on them. They would just like Kirk out. Like the spaceship had to know that they were calling Kirk. But Kirk could call the spaceship, and that's it. He couldn't call his girlfriend. Mm-hmm. He couldn't get his, hey, man, you guys want to eat? Like, there wasn't any of that going on.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't even think that would be possible.
Yeah.
But they thought that they'd be able to beam you, to break your body down into, like, subatomic particles and reconstruct you on the surface of an alien planet. They're like, that makes sense, but you got to walkie-talkie or something. You got to say Kirk out, you know? Kirk out. You know, you couldn't even... Couldn't even like see call ended on your phone. Like,
yeah,
we don't even have any idea what they're going to be able to figure out within the next few years. Like the concept of transmitting a word through the internet and us understanding what that word is to you and I, it's like, what are you talking about? But 10, 20 years from now, they're going to be like, of course you do that. That's what you do. Like, yeah. You just send words to each other.
Oh, it'd be terrible if, like, it ends up being, like, a Twitter thing where it's just, like, you know, everybody's stupid. Like, went to the mall. It's just constantly rattling around your brain.
Do you think that Twitter's making people stupid?
No.
It's making some people stupid, right?
I think it's just, I mean, I don't think it makes people stupid. I think it's just, like, you know, it's just more distractions, stuff
yeah.
like that.
Yeah. Well, you know what is the weirdest thing to me? There's some people that use Twitter, and it seems like everything they're posting, they're like manipulating what they think or what they're saying. They're manipulating it in order to get a positive reaction from people.
Yeah.
Like, I almost feel like they're not really communicating. They're like selling themselves.
Yeah.
You know, they're like faking it.
I always feel that like when like a celebrity dies, like, and then everybody posts like, oh my God, this guy meant this to me or this to me, this to me, this to me, this to me. And like,
right.
I get it, you know, but like it seems to be about themselves kind of in a weird way where it's like, this is how much this affected my life. And
exactly.
This, or like any sort of issue that people like, there's like a bandwagon of everybody jumping on, like, we got to find Coney.
Yeah.
You know, we got to find Coney, you know, like that. And it's just your entire timeline is just everybody talking about Coney. And I'm like, you watched a video, you know.
And that went away immediately.
Because the guy jerked off in public.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's all he had to do. He's running around in his underwear in San Diego, beating off on the street, losing his mind. And they were like, and this is meanwhile, this was just the messenger. The guy, Coney, was still a piece of shit.
Right.
Still a bad guy in Africa, murdering people and shit. And everybody's like, yeah, but that guy was beaten off. I don't want to be a part of this.
Well, the weird thing about the Coney thing for me was, like, when it... Because it came out of nowhere. It was just everybody being like, Coney, 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 like, you know. And then you're like, okay, well, that seems like an asshole, you know.
Right. Yeah.
Child army, never good, you
never
know.
Good.
And then you look into it, and you're like, so what do you do? And they're like, well, we want to get the United States involved and send, like, troops over there. And you're like, whoa, hold on. You know, we've got a couple countries we're already doing that with. Do we need to be adding to the thing?
To get after one guy because he just fits on a bumper sticker?
Yeah.
Coney 2012.
And I'm pretty sure if we go over there, we're not going to grab all those kids and put them into school. I think we're going to probably, you know, kill all of his kids, you know. That's kind of what we do when we go
They're
over
gonna
places.
They're going to shoot at us. We're going to shoot back.
Yeah.
We're super sorry, but we got to save those kids by shooting them.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Coney 2012 and the Ice Bucket Challenge, they both had that thing in common where I felt like there was an insincerity to the message that people were sending out through social media. Like, they were sending it out to get social media brownie points.
Right.
They wanted everyone to know that they're super conscious and super progressive.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that drives me nuts. There's certain Twitter pages that I'll visit. One of them recently blocked me because I mocked him on the podcast. Hilarious. By the way, dummy, don't you know that all I have to do is log out and I can still see your Twitter page, you dipshit? It's public. Just type it into a browser. I can read all your stupidity. But this guy's entire Twitter page is like telling people how they should be living and telling people what's wrong with the way other people are living and what's wrong with the way other people are thinking and what's so bad about certain social issues. Mm-hmm. It's hilarious. Like, don't you have sandwiches that you like? Isn't there like a movie you enjoyed? Yeah. Did you have a great time today? Did you have a revelation today? Did you feel bad about something that maybe you thought? Yeah. Did you have any, is there any unique insight as to you as a human being? Or is your whole thing like just lessons to other people?
Yeah.
Like everybody needs to learn, and this is what's wrong with this, and this is what's wrong with that. And it's all like that, those type of people are almost all either like extreme right wing, like real like heavy duty Republicans. Like this one dumbass that I go to, he's a young earth Christian guy. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's everything in his entire timeline is anti-Obama, anti-liberal, anti-gay,
dinosaurs.
anti-dinosaur. And then this other guy I go to is extreme left wing.
Mm-hmm.
And everything that he does is like super progressive, super like really like uber left wing, uber socially conscious, to the point where I'm not buying it. You sound, you know, you're not even a human.
Right.
Like you're like a sounding board.
You've
for
made
progressive
activism.
Issues.
Yeah, you made activism your personality.
Exactly. That's a great way to put it. You've made activism your personality. It's a great way to put it. And it's not really activism. It's just talking.
Yeah.
You're just yapping and bitching about shit.
Yeah.
You know, either bitching about shit or proclaiming the right way to be. And it's always like, you know, pro transgender, pro gay, pro the, it's like I can guess like super easy what your position is going to be on anything. It's going to be like super uber left wing, like down the pipe every time. No nuance, no subtlety to it. Like you're going to subscribe to whatever the agenda is, or subscribe to whatever the ideology, you know, fits.
There's a fetishization of being outraged or being offended, you know, for a lot of like on both sides of the of the thing, where you've, you know, I mean, there's genuine outrage and there's genuine being offended at things that there should be, you know, you should be offended by. But then there's some of these people that you see, it just seems like, well, you're kind of reaching.
They're,
you know,
recreationally kind of offended.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're looking for it. Yeah, there's a lot of reaching. But there's also, I think a lot of it is people just getting used to this new ability to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
And they're finding that, I think for some of these people are severely socially retarded. And they're finding that they can get love and support when they say things that other folks will agree with. So then that's all they say. They're all they're doing is like saying things they think other people will agree with.
Yeah.
And they'll just sound these things out and say them. And it's like most of it is like, duh. You know, like there's a lot of stuff like, you know, like we should end sexual discrimination. Of course.
Yeah.
Like who the fuck doesn't, are you really going to end sexual discrimination by writing about it on Twitter? Yeah.
If there was a vote.
Yeah.
Like it's going to be 99% of people that say, check, yes, we should end sexual discrimination.
Yeah.
You know?
There's a recent study that showed that most people that work out and exercise, he's backing up, sucking on that robot dick. Hear it? You hear it, folks? I gotta get you one of these, dude. These don't make any sound, bro. You just gotta fucking cut your hands up while you carry it. There's all these sharp edges.
That is.
Look at those sharp edges on it. You know what you could use this for? If you had a particularly tough cut of meat, you could roll this fucker all over the meat, and it would really soften it up nicely.
It's a tenderizer.
Yeah, it's a meat tenderizer. I mean, it really is. If you didn't have a meat tenderizer in your house, you could absolutely use this giant hunk of copper. Fucking weight.
That's a sound.
Yeah. But I think, oh shit, I put it on the wrong spot. I put it heads down, heads up. It's a piece of shit.
But
whoever sent it.
House fire with that.
Oh, yeah,
if you just left
sure.
it on, up overnight and it'd then explode. The whole copper heats up and just burns through your table.
You know what would happen? It would make weird noises and then your cat would come over and your cat would touch it with his paw and then he would burst into flames and then he would jump on the couch freaking out and then the couch would go up and then your fucking whole house would go into flames.
And it's a Ben Stiller movie. It's just like
yeah.
what is.
Yeah, it was more like an Adam Sandler movie.
Yeah.
No. It'd be more Ben Stiller, right? Maybe Will Ferrell.
Yeah.
I'll say Will Ferrell. Yeah. I think that the internet and the ability to communicate, it's so fresh that there's all these like archetype, like stereotypical sort of characters that have come up, like the right wing guy. Like, you know who's a great one to follow? Chuck Woolery, the guy from 2 and 2. We'll be right back in 2 and 2.
Yep.
Oh, that guy does. does his bitch about Obama.
Yeah.
All day. It's all about the Dems. He writes things like, anybody who write the Dems, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
If you write the Dems or the Libs, you're retarded. Okay.
No Obama.
Yeah. No Obama. No Obama. But all he does is complain about Obama all day. All day. His fucking entire Twitter feed is complaining about the liberals. You know, meanwhile, he's like living in Texas and bass fishing and whining and doing commercials for like prostate pills.
Does he do, I mean, I feel like a lot of those guys do, like, does he have a radio show?
I don't think he does. Does he?
Is he auditioning for a radio show? Is that what the Twitter feed is?
Here's his. Oh, he has a fucking Save Us. Save Us, Chuck. Oh, come on.
I did his show back.
Hold on a second. Look at this. Today on Save Us, Chuck. Get the fuck out of here. That's his show. That is so ridiculous. The idea that you would call your show Save Us, Chuck.
Political satire from a Hollywood conservative.
Oh, my God. Oh, it's political satire? Is that what it is? You know what would be better? If somebody, like, Onion style, made a Save Us Chuck and just mocked it openly. Like, nothing ever gets saved from an old actor.
I mean,
don't even play any of it, Jamie.
He's probably going to run for congressman or something, wherever he lives.
Game show legend Chuck Woolery considers why Democrats are willing to support Bonner. Why, blah, 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 blah. NASA and global warming. When your government is in charge of your fund, when the government is in charge of your funding, you toe the company line, just like all government-funded science. What does that mean? Does he mean he doesn't believe in global warming? Of course you don't. Yeah. That's an ideological thing. The right wing are reluctant to agree in climate change being something that's a product of human beings.
If you elect me. Oh, is he running for president? It says, if you elect me president, my press secretary would be...
Oh, my God. Is he serious?
Oh, I hope that happens.
And he write, if you, in gigantic capital letters, elect me president.
Write him in. That would be hilarious. That'd be great.
I always felt like he seemed like a nice guy when he was on that show.
I did his show. I did the dating game.
Get the fuck out of here.
When I was 18 years old.
No.
I did stand up at the Laugh Factory when I was 18. And they had scouts for the dating game in the audience. And they were like, I guess at that time they were doing two contestants. And then the third contestant was always a comedian. So they were going, trying to find like kids that were doing stand-up. And like, basically, you want to be on the dating game. So I got to go do.
What was that like?
It was weird. I mean, it was actually really like, because of laws or whatever, they had to make sure that everything is as they say. So you're not allowed to see the other contestant. You're not allowed to see the girl.
Right.
So they have people following you around with walkie-talkies, like, you know,
to make sure you don't look at her.
Contestant number three is on the way to the bathroom, you know, make sure that, you know, so there is really like, there was a lot of security with it.
Wow. That's interesting. Did you meet Chuck? Did you hang with him? Did you talk to him about the libs?
No, I met him when the show started and that was it.
Here's a perfect ticket. Chuck Woolery, Ted Nugent together at last. Come on.
I'd vote for it.
Would you? Just to see what happens?
Yeah.
I would vote for something ridiculous like that if they got in office and see things go exactly the same way they've always gone. Like, just like Obama.
Yeah. That's the kind of thing I would be really fascinated with.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it'd be like, I bet, you know, like, really see, like, how much power the president actually has, you know, kind of thing.
I would love to see what happens if you did elect. Social stuff, though, is dangerous. The real danger with things like, when really hardcore Republicans get in, it's like things like gay rights, abortion rights, like things along those lines. That is a real, like marijuana legalization, the support of the DEA raiding medical marijuana. That's real. That's real. Like, they really do have an impact on social issues.
Supreme Court justices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know,
that's a big power the president has. But
yeah, choosing those right-wing fuckheads who barely believe in evolution.
If they said you can vote for a starfish and a puppy and just see what happens, I bet a lot of people would vote. Just to see, like,
we would go to war with Iran the next day. Starfish hates Iran. The puppy's with it. Who would be the president, the starfish or the puppy? Yeah. The crazy thing is they're talking about Jeb Bush and Hillary Clinton. That is
terrifying
to me. Insane.
Because doesn't it feel like, you know, you're just like, oh, the whole thing's fake.
Yes.
The whole thing, oh, I mean, you kind of felt it the whole time, but isn't this like, this is the smoking gun, like, oh, it's all rigged. It's all been a trick. Like,
I mean, Clinton for 8 years, old Bush for 4, and then young Bush for 8. We got Obama. Like, hey, we got a new name. And then, what, is Obama's wife going to run next?
I mean, yeah. Or the kids.
Yeah.
Well, Hillary, you have Chelsea Clinton, then you've got... No, but they really do. They've got a brand new Bush. They're down in Texas. They got
a new one.
Yeah.
Who's the new one?
Neil or something.
Neil.
He just ran for treasury or something.
New
and
Bush.
He won, and he's he's young, and he's handsome, and he's like, they're saying like he's like the next in queue.
Oh, God. Neil Bush.
No, that's not Neil. It's another one.
He's fairly young.
Look up like 60. Texas.
Midland, Texas.
It's recent.
How many Bushes are there? Neil Bush and his family.
Maybe it's not Neil. It's maybe
robots.
It's another George.
Scary ass robots.
It's he's a Texas. He just won election like this year or last year.
Chuck Woolery. That's who I'm voting for. God damn it.
Chuck
Save
Woolery.
Us, Chuck. We'll be right back in 2-2. He would end all his fucking press conferences like that. Oh, God.
So, I wonder if he would be terrified if he won the presidency, just being like, oh, like, I wonder if he would realize that he's not probably capable of being president, or if he would just not get it at all. Just be like, I should be president.
I think he probably thinks he should be president. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ted Nugent thinks he should be president.
It's a narcissism thing. Just the idea that I should be in charge is... All presidents are probably crazy.
I don't think anybody should be president. I really don't think that it should be an option.
It should be a computer.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe we'll probably get there in the next 20 years. We have a computer. We program in all of our laws, and we were like, okay, now, make the right choice.
Yeah, but it's programmed by people, and people can influence the programming. I mean, that was one of the big deals with electronic voting machines, right?
No, we have that computer be built by a computer.
Oh, well, then we're fucked, because the computer's just going to take over. Then it's like what Elon Musk is worried about. Mm-hmm. George P. Bush.
See, look at that. That's going to be the next. He's going to be president.
He's got a lazy eye. Look at that left eye.
So did Kennedy.
Somebody punched him.
Kennedy had
a lazy eye?
Yeah.
I dated a girl who had a lazy eye, and I found lazy eye sexy for a short period of time. She was kind of a freak. She was a freak with a lazy eye. I developed a lazy eye fetish for at least a year.
Did you... It's a very small U-porn search.
Well, why are glasses hot? Girls with glasses are hot. Girls with crutches aren't hot. Like, why is some disabilities hot? A girl with glasses is something sexy about, like, hot.
Because it's like a library.
Glasses.
It's like an older authority figure. Glasses are authority.
Ooh, is that what it is?
Mm-hmm.
Someone who's reading so much, their eyes go bad.
Yeah.
Look at that hot bitch. She can't even see. Plus, you can take her glasses off. You're ugly. She doesn't even know. She can feel you, though. If you're fat and ugly, she'd be like, damn, she can feel me. She can't see
Girl with glasses and no hands. There you go.
She'd feel your weight on top of her, though. She wraps her legs around you. She'd be like, what is all this fucking fat, you slob?
Like, what are you talking about? You don't have hands. What are you being picky for?
Oh, fetishes are weird, man. I had a foot fetish too when I was a kid for a little while. I got rid of it.
That's a popular one. I don't get it. Yeah. I don't get that one. But it's
all I need is just... one girl when you're like 18 to play with your dick with her feet.
And then you got it.
And then you're good.
Yep.
It's over.
All you need is one bad nanny growing up and you got a foot fetish.
Yeah, there was I used to talk about it in my act. There was a magazine we found in the woods once when I was a kid. It was called Foot Action Magazine. And it was me and these two friends of mine, and my friend Josh and my friend Pedro, and we're going over these magazines. Like, some dude left a magazine bag, like a plastic bag under a log. And when you're a kid and you're in the woods and you find magazines, it's almost always porn.
Yeah.
And so we're going through this magazine, and it was just like no one was talking because it was all like foot stuff. It's like weird. And then like 3 minutes in, my friend goes, dude, the shit is all just dicks and feet. And I'll never forget him saying that. I never forget those words coming out of his mouth, because we were totally quiet while we were confused, because we're only like 11.
Yeah.
And he's like, dude, the shit is all just dicks and feet.
And articles.
There was no articles, man. Well, you know, obviously, again, pre-internet. You know, any 11-year-old kid has probably seen hours of hardcore ass porn.
At this point,
yeah. Yeah.
I just think it's so crazy. I mean, there was a time where there's just like, you know, guys would just go out into the woods with a foot magazine and just jerk off and leave it there. Like, that's like the scariest person I can think of.
Meanwhile, there's probably someone listening to us right now with earbuds jerking off to a foot magazine.
Yeah.
Just, what?
It's not that weird.
Hey, how'd you guys know, man? I mean, when you get enough numbers, you know, you get like a million people that listen to a podcast at once, you know, there's got to be one dude out there jerking off to a foot magazine.
Yeah.
If you looked at if there's a million, yeah, right?
It's one of the bigger fetishes, isn't it?
Probably.
It's a pretty big one.
Yeah. But like, what are their big fetishes? Like big girls? Some guys like really big girls.
Yeah. There's all the kids that dress up like animals.
Furries. Have you ever seen them? Been there live?
We were playing a festival in Atlanta. And it was the furry convention in town the same day. And we were all in the same hotel room. And we had driven from Florida. We had just done a show in Florida. And then we were sketched out by the hotel that was provided for us. So we're like, we're just going to fucking drive to like Atlanta. So we drove all night. So we got into the...
That hotel was so sketchy. You drove all night?
There was blood. We flipped the mattress over and there was blood on the bottom of it. And
flip it back.
No, I mean, we flipped it for a reason. There
was shit on one side.
So we're like, fuck this, we're driving to Atlanta. So we drove like all night, and then we get in, and we're like, we're all almost like delirious, like tired. So I'm like, all right, I get into the hotel, and then we're seeing all these furries everywhere. And I was like, what the fuck is that?
Is there a mascot convention in town?
Yeah, yeah. Well, the weird thing is, like, kids are coming up to them, because the kids see, like, you know, oh, it's a mascot, and they're like hugging them. I'm like, don't hug that costume.
It's not goofy.
But I checked into my room and there was, you know, it was most of the hotel was rented by furries, and there was the loudest like sex going on like against the wall while I was trying to sleep, and all I wanted to do is like midday, and I just wanted to get like a couple hours of sleep before the show that night, and it's just like loud sex, and then these guys just getting in fights, being like, I would never, this repeating that again and again, I would never, like, you know, like, and then just more sex kind of stuff. And then it was, that's my only encounter with furries.
Oh. I stumbled upon one as well in Pittsburgh. I was in Pittsburgh, and apparently that's one of the places where they have big, they used to have a big one in San Diego, but they moved it to Pittsburgh because Pittsburgh is more open-minded than San Diego. That doesn't make any sense to me. But this guy was telling me that he might be bullshitting me, but apparently San Diego is like a pretty conservative town in a lot of ways because there's a lot of military down there.
Mm-hmm. Well, you put a furry convention in a military community, that's probably not...
I had never seen it in person, and it was just total dumb luck that we were in town the exact same time. And when we got to our hotel, the people that were working there were ecstatic to talk to people that weren't furries and wanted to tell you all the things that furries were asking for.
Oh, wow.
And one of the crazy things they were asking for, they want all their food in bowls. They want to eat on the ground like a dog. And they asked, like, room service, they could deliver their food in bowls, like milk. They wanted milk in a bowl like a dog so they could drink out of it. And they wanted a litter box in the hallway.
Oh.
They asked for a litter box in the lobby.
They got to draw the line there.
Like, they were like, what? The guy was like, what? And I said, hold on. The guy asked you to put a litter box, like a regular size litter box? He goes, no, they wanted a large box. They wanted to pay to have a large litter box installed in the lobby. And their thoughts were, hey, we have this whole hotel. We bought out the whole hotel. It wasn't the whole hotel. I was in the hotel, too.
Right.
But there was a few other people that weren't furries.
So we want to shit in the lobby.
They wanted to shit in the lobby.
That's insane.
Or at least pee. Like, they asked the guy. I mean, they could have been pulling the guy's leg. But I guarantee you, if the guy said yes, somebody would have shit in that lobby.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody, if they had, like, a big, like, sandbox.
Yeah.
Like, one of the ones that kids play in, filled with cat litter.
I love... I love going to like different like groups message boards and just like hanging out on them, like lurking on them and just reading them. And it's like one of my favorite things to do at night. And I've been on like furry ones before, and it's like they're like serious about that stuff. It's insane. It's like it's like, and that is a very new thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
something happened. I don't know if it's Wi-Fi signals or cell phone service but something. Something did something to people.
Vaccines.
Yeah.
Jenny McCarthy's right. What if it's, there's the other thing, these spirit animals. Like people like I'm a foxkin. Like I'm a fox mm-hmm. is my spirit
other
animal.
Kins. Other
yeah.
kins.
Other kins.
There's planet kins. There's girls who think that I do a song about it on this new album. I do a song called Bullies, where the whole point of the song is like, you know, everyone's cracking down on these bullies, but like, okay, fine, bullies are bad, but like if the bullies go away, we're screwed. Like because
people are going to get out of control.
Because they're keeping you in line. Like, you know, yeah, I remember, when I was a kid, you go away for the summer. You know, you don't see your friends so much like that. And so I was really into Ninja Turtles. And like, and so then when it gets to be around like 13 or years old, like I come back to school with all my Ninja Turtle toys, you know, thinking that everybody's going to like, you know, be still into Ninja Turtles. And then everybody just made fun of me. They're like, what are you doing with toys? Like, and I was like, okay, good. Duly noted. Got rid of them. And it was fine. Like, you know, because the bullies kept me in line. They kind of told me, like, that's not cool anymore.
Yeah, they mock you.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, I was 11, and I moved from Florida to Boston. And I guess I was 11, 12. I might have been 13. About 13. And I guess I was in middle school. And I went to this – I was in Jamaica Plain, which is kind of – now it's become more gentrified. But when I lived there – it was pretty sketchy. It was like late 70s, early, like maybe 1980, at the latest 1980. I think high school freshman year was 81 for me. So I guess it was like 1979 or 1980. And I had like an Incredible Hulk lunchbox. And, you know, and when you're in a fucking, you know, quote unquote urban middle school and you show up with a fucking cartoon lunchbox, you get shit all over. I had that lunchbox for one day. I remember, like, I was so happy I got this lunchbox. I was, like, super psyched. I love the Hulk. And they fucking looked at me like I was, like, a victim. Like, I was, like, ready. I was going to get attacked. Like, I was a limping antelope straying in front of the water
hole. Back of the herd.
Yeah, I mean, I was realized, like, I got to get rid of this thing. I remember thinking to myself, I got to leave it in a locker somewhere.
Yeah.
I got to take this lunchbox and just leave it somewhere. I can't even bring it home because, like, I'm in danger carrying it around. Like carrying around like it was a target.
Yeah.
Like none of the other kids had lunch boxes with like cartoon. Like there was no innocence at all. It was non-existent. It was like a dangerous, creepy school environment.
Yeah.
And here I'm walking around with this fucking lunchbox.
But if you didn't have that experience, you could be dressing up like Hulk today, being in a hotel room with like
Comic-Con. But it's not bad. I mean, Comic-Con. Yeah. I've never been. I've been to San Diego while it was happening. They're having a good time. You know?
Yeah, no, I think there's a huge difference between the cosplayers in Comic-Con and furries.
What's the difference?
I think that they'll...
you're backtracking.
Yeah, you know, I'll stick with it. I'll stick with it.
Okay, let's explore this.
It's, I don't think... I think the furry thing, and I'm probably wrong, but the quick take that I get away from it is that it seems to be a lot about sex. You know, like dressing up and having sex with other animals.
They defend that, though.
Yeah.
If you bring that up to furries, like,
they say, no, it's not about that.
Furries contact me because we shit on them in the podcast because, you know, I've heard that as well. And they say, it's not about that.
Yeah.
But that's what people say about anything.
True.
People don't want to ever admit it's just about sex, about weird.
And okay, but on the other hand, now I'm even like doubting myself. I'm playing devil's advocate to myself. Even if it is about that, and it's just a person who wants to dress up like an animal and fuck another guy dressed like an animal, who gives a shit, really? I mean, I think it's weird, but like,
weird,
it doesn't bother me. It doesn't affect me at all.
It's voluntary.
Yeah.
As long as things are voluntary, who cares? You can be weird and voluntary. It's not.
Yeah.
It's not a bad thing to want to fuck a mascot. You know, why is that awful? Mm.
But it's also not bad to think it's weird.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's definitely not bad to think it's weird. But there's a lot of weird shit that we just accept. Like, what's up with like garter belts? Like, why do people like thigh high stockings and elastic bands that connect your underwear to your stocking? What the fuck is all that about? That's weird shit too.
Yeah.
Like, why is that hot?
Yeah.
Yeah. Lingerie? I don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
So, Jesus Christ, piece of shit. I did it again. I set this fucking shitty thing down, and it's hot as fuck every time I do it. We're going to burn the studio to the ground. The studio's going down. But if you look at it like that, it's like a lunar module or something.
Yeah. It looks like a miniature from like an old sci-fi film.
I've never seen one so stupid. I've seen a bunch of these things. I've never seen one this dumb or this
It's like
heavy.
A Flash Gordon dildo.
I just can't understand why anybody would make it so hard to hold on to. Like, the idea that it's so sharp-edged.
Yeah.
How did that happen? Where'd that come from?
What?
The giant vape thing. How come they have the little e-cigarettes and the little e-cigarettes where it looked like a cigarette, and then it turned to like black ones, like, ooh, it's murdered out. You got a murdered cigarette. It's all black, blacked out. And then it turned into these goddamn robot dicks.
I think it's all battery life. Ooh. I think it's because the batteries in these things, you know, I think this will last like a day. You know, you can kind of hit it all day.
Right That's there. It?
Yeah.
That only lasts a day? That How many times a day do you hit that thing?
For constantly.
And you were smoking how much?
It was a pack a day for a while, and then I switched to this. And but I bet my nicotine level is through the roof. I take in more nicotine now than when I smoked a pack a day.
But nicotine's not necessarily what's dangerous, right?
Well, it's not great for you. I mean, it'll raise your blood pressure. You know, you still got problems with like heart attack, stroke, kind of things like that. But as
for
far
real,
as, yeah, because it's a stimulant, so it raises your blood pressure.
You got to really jack it up all day though to get that kind of response, don't you?
Yeah, which I do. Like, but like as far as carcinogens, I think it's pretty in the clear as far as they know right now.
Did you ever see that Russell Crowe? He's backing up. You hear it?
I'm trying to keep it quiet for the podcast.
No, don't worry about it, man. What was that Russell Crowe movie, The Insider? Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Where he was a scientist that worked for the cigarette companies and was he was testifying about all the different chemicals that they put.
Yeah.
That's terrifying shit.
Yeah.
The number of chemicals they allowed. The FDA allowed 599 plus chemicals.
That's crazy. I mean, I remember, I was just talking about this last week, where there's I remember when I was a kid, you know, you download like Anarchist Cookbook and all this stuff from like the internet, and there was a CIA handbook that you could download. I don't know if it's real or not, but and one of the things that they told you how to do in there is they said there's enough chemicals in a pack of cigarettes to kill somebody. And you boil it down, you distill it, and you can make like a paste that you would put on like a doorknob. And then if somebody like touches it, it'll kill them. Like it'll give them like same type of deal with the nicotine thing, where it's an absorbent, you
That's
know,
so crazy.
Toxin.
That's so crazy. It says here cigarette smoke contains 4,000 chemicals, including 43 known cancer-causing compounds and 400 other toxins.
43 out of 4,000 is not that bad, though, if you know, only 43 of them cause cancer.
But there is 599 ingredients, so I don't know why there's 599 ingredients and 4,000 chemicals. I don't know how that works. Hmm. But all those things were approved. That's what's really crazy. Like, they say, yeah, put that in.
Yeah.
Well, we're thinking about throwing formaldehyde and just say, oh, yeah, cool. We're still golfing, right? Yeah, you're golfing. I mean, they just threw all these different chemicals, and what's really fascinating about it is the object or the purpose of all these chemicals is just to try to make you more addictive.
Right.
That's what it is.
That's where the flavor comes from.
I
don't know.
I don't think so.
Cancer chemicals?
I mean, they add a bunch of shit, according at least to that movie, that Russell Crowe movie.
Yeah.
Just to try to get you more and more hooked.
Yeah. Does a great job.
Yeah.
It's really addictive.
Imagine if you came out with a product today that did the damage the cigarette did, and you tried to push it. You know, if you came out with some new thing.
Yeah.
And it killed, fucking 500,000 people a year.
Like a vaporizer that gets super hot and burns down.
This isn't killing anybody, man. These
not yet.
Aren't
it's not mass produced.
Do you think they're dangerous?
No, I was just talking about that one because it gets so
fire.
High. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it takes a long time to find this stuff out, doesn't it? Don't they have to do like 20-year studies and things like before they kind of really know? I mean, as far as it, you know, I read about it because I do it all. I use the vaporizer, so I like.
So you worry?
Yeah, a little bit. Like I look up whenever I see anything about it, and it seems like they find or it's not. It's not as good as not doing anything. But it's a lot better than smoking. You know?
It's not as good for you as not doing it, but it's not as bad for you as smoking cigarettes.
Yeah.
So for people that smoke cigarettes, you got to kind of weigh your options. Like, do you think you're going to be able to quit?
Mm-hmm.
And if you can, you should just quit on your own.
Right.
But if you don't think you're going to be able to quit,
you can kind of
do that and get your fix.
Yeah.
Is it as good?
No, it's not as good. But like, I've been doing it for like 7 years now, and now I don't even, like when I want nicotine, I don't think about a cigarette. like
you think about that.
Yeah. So
when was the last time you smoked a cigarette? An hour ago.
No. I probably actually smoked one probably a month ago, but like one at like a party.
One?
Yeah.
You could do that?
Yeah, because I smoke one cigarette maybe three or four times a year, like really infrequently now.
Stephen King gives himself one cigarette when he finishes a book.
Oh, wow. That's why I write so many books.
Probably.
It's his whole motivation.
But isn't that interesting? Like he allows himself a cigarette when he finishes a book.
Huh.
Yeah.
It's a good... To help up your productivity.
There's a documentary that I'm in called The Culture The Culture High. Recent documentary by the same people that did this other documentary is in called The Union. And it's all about how the prison industry and the medical marijuana and marijuana has been demonized, how many people are in jail because of it, mm-hmm. and just the percentage of people that are nonviolent drug offenders that are in there because of marijuana, and how many people, like the literally drug war would dissolve if it wasn't for marijuana being illegal.
Right.
Like the amount of people that get arrested for other drugs pales in comparison. But one of the things they talked about was cigarettes, and they said that if you smoke two packs of cigarettes, that's the breaking number where you are 4,000 times more likely to get cancer.
Two packs of cigarettes?
Yeah.
In your life?
No. Every day.
Oh, every day.
Two packs a day.
Oh.
4,000 times more. I might have made those numbers up, by the way.
They sound good.
I listened to it on a plane. I mean, I watched it on a plane, half awake.
That's crazy. That's a lot of cigarettes, though. Two packs a day.
Not for Doug Stanhope. That motherfucker throws them down.
John Mellencamp does four.
Does he really?
Packs a day. I heard that. I was in like one of his some show about him. He smokes like four. But whenever you see him in an interview, he's smoking, and then he's like lighting the other one. Like when that one's going out, like he's just going back to back. This thing's all day.
I was in Indiana and at a UFC, and John Mellencamp was in the audience, and they showed a picture of him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they showed the video of him, in the crowd, and showed it to the audience, and they booed him.
Really?
Boo! Liberal! They think he's, and I had to ask. I go, why don't they like John Mellencamp? He's from Indiana. I was born in a small town.
Yeah.
Like the whole deal? Nope. He's a liberal.
He must have said something. There must have been something... I wonder if he got outspoken on some sort of issue that, like...
Slavery, something like that.
He don't even like that.
Yeah, I don't know what it was, man, but they booed the shit out of him. And I was like, that is crazy.
Jack and Diane?
Yeah, he likes... he's too liberal for Indiana. At least that crowd, the UFC crowd in Indiana.
Huh.
They were mad at him. I couldn't believe it. I was like, this is goddamn John Mellencamp, you fucks. Commies.
I wonder if he had any idea of that before he went, that's got to suck. Go to see like a UFC fight and then the entire like place hates you.
Yeah, it was a large number of people booing him too. It wasn't just like a couple of boos like scattered in the clapping and applause.
Yeah,
you know?
That's kind of a, you tell your wife like, you know what, I don't think I need to see the rest of the fight. Let's just get in the car.
Pretend we're going to the bathroom. Yeah. Fire up the car. Let's get the fuck out of here before they lynch us. Yeah, there's certain spots in the country where you're not allowed to be liberal. You mean, you really are not. You are allowed to be kind of conservative anywhere. You'll be mocked, but it's not dangerous, you know,
right,
per se. But if you're a liberal in certain parts of the country, like you are, that's the team mentality.
Yeah.
But are you a Raiders fan? You know, there's like, you know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. like that team mentality really comes out. People love to defend their team, and when you are a liberal, you're thought to be weak. You goddamn bleeding heart. Oh,
yeah.
You're going to help all those welfare moms and all the, you know, they just take that money and spend it on fucking drugs. Don't you know? Don't you know?
I hang out on all these conspiracy sites, like, you know, and a lot of them, you know, get, you know, a lot of them lean right. You know, a lot of conspiracy sites. And
almost all of them, right?
Yeah, most of them. And remember when Texas was talking about seceding? Or Rick Perry was talking about seceding from the union.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
When he was about to run for president, which was a weird move. But he was like, you know, we can secede. And so, like, everybody on the conspiracy boards that were from Texas, there was this big thread where everybody's talking about it. And they're like, and everybody was like, first thing we're going to do is we're going to go to Austin and just kick everybody's ass.
That's what they said?
Yeah, that's like,
that was the first thing.
If we secede, we're going to get Austin.
This is broken. Stop working.
Probably burned it all up.
Pretty That's
good.
Hilarious.
Put some juice on there.
I got to put more juice in it?
Here.
How much did I burn, dude?
A lot.
That's gross. Yeah, isn't Texas like it's a different sort of a state? It's like it's the way they're set up.
It's the Republic of Texas.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they my history's right. I think during or leading up to the Civil War, Texas wanted to be part of the Union, or it came that Texas could be part of the Union, but then they wouldn't accept them because they thought they didn't want to swing the amount of pro-slave states. They didn't want to add another pro-slave state, and they had a equal, amount of pro-slave and non-slave states. So they didn't accept Texas's entrance into the Union. So they made their own country. And then after the Civil War, when they asked Texas to come into the country, they had this kind of caveat, which they're like, okay, but at any point, if we want to leave, we can leave.
If it gets shitty, it's a prenup.
Yeah, basically. Texas is the only state that came into the country with a prenup, and where they were like, okay, but we can leave at any time. And so I think that's what Rick Perry was talking about.
Is this the thing I got to unscrew? Yeah. This is so goofy. There's so much involved in these fucking things.
Oh, yeah.
I can't believe you can only suck on it four or five times and it runs out of juice.
Oh, you sat there cooking it for about 10 minutes probably.
No, it wasn't that long.
The first time I caught it, it was going for a minute.
Yeah, but does that cook in the stuff? How come it doesn't come out then?
It was. It wasn't,
but very little.
Yeah.
All right, so where does it go?
So you put it on that,
that?
On that little coil.
This can't be good for you.
And you got to make that coil, don't you?
This is my first and last day.
Oh, yeah. Because you have to build your own coils in these things.
What the fuck?
Like, I have a bunch of wire in my car.
What's wrong with you?
I love nicotine.
Is it really worth it?
It's the greatest drug.
All right, I'm going to pour it in. See this here, ladies and gentlemen. This is what you do.
Yeah, just a little bit, I think. That's probably good.
This doesn't even give me a buzz, though. I'd rather have a cigar. You ever see there's a video? Oh, I fucking spilled everything.
Watch out, you're going to have a heart attack.
Really?
No.
There's a video of this guy hand rolling a Cuban cigar with a GoPro on his head. It's pretty dope. You get to see how they do it. So there's so much skill involved in that.
Are those legal here now?
Yes.
That's cool.
You're only allowed to have a few, though.
Do they sell them? Can you buy them in Los Angeles?
That's a good question. But I think you're allowed to have a few now because we're kind of opening up the thing. Jamie, find that out. There's a number that you're allowed to have. I'm pretty sure.
I'd imagine you could buy them now.
There's a lot of counterfeit ones. And apparently there's so much of a demand for Cuban cigars that the quality has diminished
really?
For some of them. Yeah, they're just not worth as much as they used to be. They're just not as good, rather, as they used to be because the soil's getting depleted. There's a lot of fake ones. There's a lot of counterfeit Cuban cigars. But it's another one of those things, just like the fucking rich guys that want to go to Everest.
It says you can bring in $100 worth of alcohol or tobacco from Cuba.
But do they sell them here in the States yet?
I just did it again. I put this fucking stupid thing face up. I might be retarded. I need to go to a doctor. Maybe that's what's happening. This thing's making me stupid.
That's what they'll find out.
Yeah. I don't know, man.
That's what happened to everybody.
Well, then why does Stephen King say it makes him smarter?
Well, he's just saying it makes him... Oh, yeah. Oh.
Made his brain work.
Maybe it makes him... maybe it makes you more creative, but not smarter.
Well, that's what Tony Hinchcliffe says. Tony Hinchcliffe says when he smokes and he writes, it's just way better. It's like his brain just is firing up.
Well, it's almost like, all those... Well, I guess everybody smoked, so it's not really, But all those old writers, you think about Hemingway, it's just all smoking and drinking and all this
stuff. Well, how about NASA? When they were trying to do the moon landing shit, they were all in the fucking control room. They were all puffing. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
They all had those weird,
They're smoking in the spaceship. It was just...
No.
I don't know.
They're no
smoking
air.
On the moon. There's so many cigarette butts up there. They put the flag on.
They got an ashtray on the moon.
Buzz Aldrin. Yep.
Yeah, the control room though in Houston when they were all monitoring it, they were all smoking. There's a bunch of guys smoking, and they all looked like Peter Parker's boss from Spider-Man. Yeah. Those haircuts. What was his name? J. Jonah Jameson. Yeah,
that's what everybody looked like.
They're old school. And they all died when they were 50. Cancer. See ya.
Yeah,
that's it. You got to a certain age. There's no wise old men. They didn't make it. Just smoke cigarettes, die.
Yeah.
A few hardy souls lasted deep in their 60s, and they talk like this. Well, they had those. Remember those things you'd see?
People had those things on their neck so they could talk to you like this.
Yeah. Do they do that anymore? Is that a thing?
That's a good question. There's a commercial that they air from some woman. She was beautiful when she was younger, and then she smoked a lot of cigarettes and got cancer, and now half her face is missing, and she's got no throat. She wears a wig, and she has, like, the whole...
I really hate those commercials.
And she wears this thing on her neck.
I get the point of the commercials, but they're so unpleasant, which is the point, you know. But
there was a hack thing that comedians used to do. I don't know who invented it first. I think it was probably Hicks. Who first started putting the microphone?
He put a microphone on his neck and started talking like this.
And then Leary kind of ripped it off from Hicks, and a bunch of other people started ripping it off from each other. It became like, well, no one can tell you you can't do that. And then it was the hack thing to do. And you did a thing about smoking.
Yeah.
Stick the microphone on your neck to represent those things. Remember, they used to have a thing they used to have to put.
Yeah, it was.
Like you a said fake it, voice box.
Yeah, it was just something that vibrated, right? Mm-hmm. It did what your vocal cords would do.
Yeah, it somehow or another picked up on the sounds you were trying to make with your fucking cancer-ridden neck.
And now we'll just be able to send it through our mind because of that technology. So that's the new.
And maybe your mind would work better if you're smoking. Nobody would worry about throat cancer anymore. You don't even need that fucking thing.
Yeah.
We're on our way to becoming aliens, right? Aliens had those little tiny mouths because they didn't need them anymore.
Yeah.
Big, giant, stupid heads because all they're doing is like sending data with their heads. They need a large hard drive up there.
Well, we'll probably end up just being computers.
Mm-hmm.
Where we'll upload us into like some sort of hard drive.
Probably more complicated than that. We're probably going to be some sort of artificial creation, like an artificial body. Like, not necessarily a computer, but, like, you know, everything about us artificial. Not, like, living... Well, you know, eventually probably a virtual thing.
Mm-hmm.
We'll probably realize, like, why are we so hung up on bodies?
Yeah.
You know, we could just...
Like, maybe they'll just be... It'll probably just be, like, a computer that has versions of us just kind of out of... Well, it's good to know where you came from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if computers paying respect. Like, let's keep, you know, a lot of them virtually inside of us. And then the computers will go out and explore the galaxy and kind of, you know, and we'll just be kind of an interesting footnote, you know, that they kind of pay respect to.
What the fuck? Yeah. We'll be like, when you go to the zoo and you see those like fake cave people, you know, they're like statues of the fake people by the cave. With
like
the
Neanderthals.
Club. Yeah.
Like this is where we came from. You know, they were kind of not as smart as we are. And that's what we'll be to the computers.
We'll have people. These are early men that have people that are just bent over looking at their phone, and that's what it would
be. They're like, that's baby us. That's them with baby us.
Yeah, instead of like having a club, one of those big caveman Flintstone style clubs with the fur on, like, like, you know, 2001 A Space Odyssey looking people.
Yeah,
instead of that, they just have a dude with an iPhone like
at a Starbucks tweeting about how great the Jinx was.
And then they'll have Google glasses. This was the first step.
Mm-hmm.
Love Google Glass, and then have you seen the virtual reality ski goggles? Where you see the whole world in front of you becomes a desktop, and you start manipulating things in front of you.
Oh
like,
yeah,
spin. Yeah, they have, it's like
Minority Report kind of thing. Yeah,
but it's all you're wearing goggles, and through these goggles, you could see like I could see you, but I also could like pull up things in front of you.
Augmented reality.
Yes,
that's what they call them. Yeah.
Yes, augmented reality.
Augmented reality.
And then Oculus Rift.
Yeah, that's going to be huge.
That's scary.
That comes out like this year, right?
I don't know. I mean, there's versions of it now. Like Duncan Trussell has, he has an older version, but he just tried the newest version. And he called me up screaming and ranting and raving. Like, this is, like apparently it's in 4K. So it's just insanely graphic, like insanely high definition, beautiful video. And the way they film it, they put cameras all over your body, like these little small cameras. So everywhere you're moving, that option is available. So like you move to the right, they've already got video of that. You move to the left, and the processing speed of computers today is apparently good enough to keep up with this.
Yeah.
And you go into a room, and when you go into this room, there's a guy playing the piano. And he goes, you really feel like you're in a room with a guy playing the piano. It's that good.
That's crazy. Yeah, I was reading something about this company that's trying to start up where what they're going to do is take these, because I think it's like a spherical camera that is basically recording in all directions at once.
Mm-hmm.
But they want to go to like Everest. They want to go to the pyramids. They want to plant one of these things, and you pay like a monthly service. And then you're just sitting in your home. You're like, I want to see what it's like at the pyramids right now. And you put this on, and you're there. They're going to put one on a satellite in low orbit going around the planet so you can just be like floating in space over like anywhere you want. And then they're saying that like what's really going to be crazy about it is how it's going to change news. Because like CNN will have their camera, like, you know, Fox News will have their camera. So like, you know, something happens in Ferguson, you know, they go down there and they plant their camera there. And then you can just, all their viewers can just go and actually be at like the, where the news is happening. And you can kind of look around and see for yourself. You can watch the State of the Union with, you know, the camera there and you see what your specific state senator's doing.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. You can see John McCain playing poker on his phone, talking about going to war with Syria.
Yeah.
Remember when that was going on? He was advocating going to war with Syria, and he was playing fucking poker.
Angry Birds.
They caught him doing it, too, man. He's still working there. Yeah. Like that should be something you should be paying attention to, man. Maybe we should get somebody in there who's paying attention, not playing poker on their fucking phone, dude. Yeah. Christ. How trivial is war to you? It's so less relaxed.
It's less important than Farmville.
Oh, he can't help it. He can't help it. It's like someone sitting there talking to you at dinner. They have to check their phone.
Yeah.
And the call of kings and queens and aces just pulls him in.
Yeah. God. How old is he?
1,000.
Because people were like, he was running for president, people were like, he's going to die like in the next year or two. And that was 8 years ago now.
Well, he's unhealthy, too. I mean, it's not like he's just old and he exercises a lot and, you know, he's not Jack LaLanne. I mean, he was really fucked up because of being a prisoner of war. I mean, he was tortured, and his shoulders are fucked up, like, really beyond repair. That's the thing. Like, he can't raise his hands. He can't, like, raise his arms over his head. You know, he's not, like, physically well. But he makes sense sometimes, which is weird. You know, he's not off about everything. Like, he starts talking. Like, one of the things about when he and Obama were debating, he was... They were talking about going into Afghanistan, and, you know, Obama was like, you know, we'll just go in, we'll send troops, we'll take care of the bad guys. And McCain was like, wait a minute, man. That's when McCain made sense, because, like, this is a guy who was in war, you know, like, was a prisoner of fucking war, was tortured, was held by the Viet Cong. And he was like, it is not that easy, man. Like, do you know what it's like over there? One of the things that he said that really fucking stunned me, and I had to research it, and it turns out it's totally true. He said, most of Afghanistan operates essentially exactly the way it did when Alexander the Great was around.
Hmm.
Yeah, he's like, you're talking about a country that's never been conquered.
Yeah.
Like, the terrain itself makes it just almost impenetrable. Like, you're going to send troops into the mountains?
Yeah. And it was like our plan to bankrupt the Russians was to get them involved over there with the same people that we're fighting now. So it's like we like set this great trap and then walked, like, you know, just forgot about it. And then walked. It's like the kid from Home Alone went home one day and forgot all the stuff that he had set for the burglars.
Well, it's almost like they set a trap and then didn't realize that a trap had heroin in it.
They're like,
wait a minute. This isn't a trap.
We left all that great heroin
Forget what I said. Forget what I said. Let's try one more time, but do it right and grow heroin, okay? But this is going to cost us so much money. Not really. It's actually just a lot of money there just sitting around.
CIA can move it. It'll all be fine.
Well, the beautiful thing they found recently, they said that there's trillions of dollars worth of minerals in the mountains.
Like
lithium, stuff they use to make batteries.
Yeah.
To blow on this thing. Now it makes noise.
I think it's full.
I think I broke it. Is it full? When it's full, you had to do it because you saw me do it. You get that pull.
It's monkey see, monkey do.
It's exciting. It's like Pavlov's dog. Ring that bell. This is not going to be a regular thing, folks, if you listen to this podcast. He asked me if he could do his, and I said, all right, yeah, do it, man. And then I'm just fucking doing it, too. I have bottles of this shit, Lane. What if I drank that? How quick would I die?
Probably pretty quick.
You think?
I think within, like the whole bottle?
Mm-hmm.
$10 says that you die within.
If you poured that into someone's drink, like, you know, people are always talking about, like, pouring roofies in someone's drink. What if you pour this into, like, someone had, like, a Jaeger bomb?
Yeah, you just have a heart attack. You just probably have a heart attack within a couple hours.
God. Yeah, right? The stimulant. It's crazy. This guy sent me fucking heart attack juice. I got it on my fingers. Is that bad?
I don't think.
Well, dude, you had gloves on, man.
Yeah, but that was back in 2007. I'm sure they've changed the formula. I'm sure this random guy.
This guy's cool. I don't even know what his face looks like. How dare I? The whole thing is ridiculous, man. What's the next thing, you know?
Well, they vaporized alcohol now. Have you seen that? Yeah, if you look it up on YouTube, it's crazy.
No.
Yeah, it's this. It's like this little kit you can buy, and you like heat it up, and you put like alcohol in it, and then people are just taking these vapor hits of alcohol.
That's crazy.
And then they just the FDA just legalized powdered alcohol this week. So now you can like snort vodka.
What?
Yeah, they approved it.
That can't be good.
But it sounds. But you know, it sounds worth trying.
Would you try it?
Oh yeah.
How would you know how much to take?
Just guess.
Like, you know, one of the good things about alcohol is it's super powerful, but you kind of know what a shot of tequila is.
Right.
A shot of tequila is pretty uniform.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why, like, whiskey is okay, but moonshine's illegal.
Right? Okay, yeah, I guess. I never thought about it, but yeah, you're
some
probably right.
Moonshine.
Because there's some sort of... Well, isn't moonshine just illegal because it's
not
unregulated?
Taxed. Yeah.
You know, and they don't know what the percentage is that you're putting in there?
Like Everclear, that stuff's legal, right?
Yeah, and in some states.
Some states it's not. Yeah, states have weird laws on booze. Like Utah's got weird laws on booze. Like your beer can't even be that strong.
Yeah, because Mormons.
Yeah, fucking Mormons. I was there recently, and it was hilarious. When we landed, we were coming down the escalator, and there was all these people that were waiting there for the missionaries to return. The elders who are in like foreign countries convincing these poor people to sign up and become Mormons.
Not drink caffeine.
It's so fucked up, man. So we're coming down the No, you can drink caffeine.
I don't really?
You just can't drink coffee. It's a loophole.
You can't drink.
Can't drink coffee, but you can drink caffeine. So my friend who was a Mormon used to drink Monster energy drinks all day.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, wait a minute. You're not allowed to drink coffee, but you can drink that? He's like, yeah, it's not covered. It's not covered by Jesus. Jesus doesn't say anything about fucking Zion's energy drinks.
He's cool with taurine.
What is taurine? Is
I
that
don't
bad
know.
For you?
Probably.
That's the shit that's in Red Bull, right? This fucking dude, I'm not lying. I never saw him. It was like his arm was connected to his can of fucking Monster energy drink. He would drink that shit all day long.
Yeah. Everyone's got to have something. If that's the only thing you can have, then you're going to be addicted to that.
Well, before he was a Mormon, he had some issues with some substances. And then his wife got him to convert over, and then he just went with the program. But he liked his caffeine, so became a Monster's energy drink kind of a guy. But a lot of those dudes that are like AA guys.
Cigarettes and coffee.
Yeah. They're not drug-free by any goddamn stretch of the imagination. They're just not taking anything that just obliterates your consciousness.
Right.
They're just altering it on a consistent basis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or something that's a little easier on your liver.
Yeah, it's definitely easy. Well, the cigarettes aren't.
Cigarettes bad for your liver? I didn't know
it's
that.
Bad for everything. Oh. Your whole body's like, what do we do with this shit? It's in your bloodstream. Your pancreas, apparently. Pancreatic cancer is a big one with cigarette smokers. The lungs, of course. But it stunts so many different processes in your body. There's so many different things that are just going, what is all this shit?
People should just do nitrous all day, every day. That's the cleanest.
Just do whippets, man. There's something about doing whippets. If you commit to, like, whippets and huffing paint are kind of in the same category. Like, wait, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You're taking some stuff that you're not supposed to get high with, and you're using it to get high?
Yeah.
That's not cool. But meanwhile, do whippets fuck you up more than a glass of Jack Daniels?
Whippets are amazing. They're like, I went through a phase where I was doing a lot of whippets. And,
really?
Oh, God. And it was, you had to stop because it was just like, this is, I enjoy this.
Doesn't it give you brain damage?
Well, everything gives you brain damage, doesn't
everything?
It? I mean, you lose like 200 or 20,000 brain cells a day just from, you know, waking up, you know, kind of walking around. Like, so it's, I mean, I think it's, you know.
How many do you have?
It's like 1,000.
Do you get new ones?
No, you don't. I don't think you get new ones.
Ever?
No.
Fuck.
I think you have what you have.
Well, I think you get new ones if you do mushrooms. That's the only way.
That makes sense. Probably.
Yeah. Really? For real?
Yeah.
It's like one of the few things that have been shown to like regenerate neurons in the brain or something like that.
So just do as much mushrooms as you are doing nitrous and you'd be fine. It's nice.
Maybe.
Equilibrium.
You probably have to live in a mountain somewhere. You probably get so detached from everybody. Just show yourself for when you're getting firewood and then go back to your cabin.
I was doing a sketch, like a music video for, it was this country music song called, it was about like blue laws in states, like, you know, and if they won't sell you alcohol, you know, the song's called What About Mouthwash? And it was like, you know, all these different things, like what about mouthwash? What about huff and paint and all these things that you could do. And, for the music video, it was like, oh, fuck it. We'll just, you know, we're in the truck, got some paint in spray paint in a bag, and my friend had like mouthwash, and so we just like did it for the shot, and I just, you know, because the shot was on, so I just sprayed the spray paint in the bag, and then I just huffed in.
Oh my gosh.
And it's so fast, it's so immediate, and it's so high. Like,
what does it do to you?
It's like I did it, and I was like, and then I like kind of broke take. I was like, whoa, like, you know, I was like, this really works. Like, huffing paint is like the real deal.
Oh, that's so funny.
It's quick.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
Oh, have you ever talked to someone who works in an auto body shop, like spray painting cars?
No.
You know, they wear those masks and shit, but it doesn't really work. I mean, it works a little bit. But if you're spray painting a car, you go into those booths, those guys get high as fuck. Ugh. That's like the hidden secret of auto body work.
It's such a dirty high, too, I would imagine.
What is the paint high? The huffing.
It doesn't feel like it's good for you.
It's not like you're drinking kale shakes.
Yeah, no, you're like lightheaded, and you're like, whoa, I'm high, and you're like, this is going to feel bad when it wears off.
Oh, God. That's so crazy. Wow. Everybody's seen those images of the guy who got arrested several times, and he has paint, like fucking goatee of silver paint all over his face.
That guy. Like,
fuck, man. That's so weird.
You ever see that, I forget what show it was. It was one of those, I don't know if it was a rehab show or something, intervention show.
Yes.
Where the girl was addicted to duster. The dust stuff that you spray on your keyboard.
Spray on your keyboard, the air?
Yeah.
What does that do to you?
I guess it gets you high. I don't know. I've never done it. But like, she was going through, like, she just, and they would follow her to Walmart, and she'd go to Walmart and just fill up her cart with duster. And like, she does this every day. Just goes through and just does duster all day.
You know, the problem with that show is I've been exposed too much to how television works.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, part of me is calling bullshit. Part of me is saying like, yeah, this person is so together that they've contacted the producers of the show. They're on the show. They're walking around. The camera's following them. Really?
Right.
Are you sure? Or are you sure they're not engineering this whole thing?
But do they call or do their families call?
Mm. That's a good question.
I just don't get why. I mean, like if I had a loved one who was like, you know, like had a problem. You know, and it was like, all right, I got to do an intervention. Like, the last thing I would think of it is like, and I got to get a TV show to watch this thing. Like, you know.
You say that, but I mean, what the fuck did Dr. Drew do for all those years when he was doing Celebrity Rehab? He took these people at their most vulnerable time and publicly shamed them, showed them on television, having the DTs, freaking out at each other, screaming at each other, incredibly vulnerable, and exposed them to the world for other people's amusement. And he's a doctor, an addiction specialist. So I don't think it's that cut and dry. When TV's involved and profits involved, people have weird ways of rationalizing things.
Right.
Like, this is the only way these people will get help. But if you do it on TV.
No, but I mean like the family. I mean, do you think the family, do they? I guess they have to get paid something to do it.
They have to get paid something, yeah.
And but the family, it's not like a windfall.
The family might be morons, you know? They might think it's the way to do it.
Well, it's very, I mean, there was a show that I was obsessed with for a long time called I Didn't Know I Was Pregnant. Have you ever seen that show? Have you seen it?
No.
It's fucking amazing. Find it on like iTunes or whatever. But it's a show where they would, it's about people who just didn't realize that they were pregnant and then they have their babies in the toilet or, you know, or walking to work or something. And they would reenact it. Like it was kind of like Unsolved Mysteries style where they'd interview the real people and then they'd have actors like playing it out like, oh, my stomach hurts. I'm going to go take a shit. And then the baby, they'd throw. The crazy thing about the show is that I watched one episode where they had the mom get up, you know, and then the camera goes into the toilet and they put a real baby in a toilet. like a real, like for the shot.
What the fuck? in the water?
Yeah, they put a baby in the toilet bowl for the shot. And I was like,
oh my God. Did it have a diaper on or was it naked?
It was the angle you couldn't see. I don't know.
Just kids holding onto the seat going, what the fuck, Mom?
But I knew a girl who worked on the show. And I was, when I found out she worked on it, I was like, why do people, you know, agree to do, because they all look like idiots. There's no way you can be on that show and not look like one of the dumbest people on, you know, if you didn't know you were pregnant. Like, so I was like, why do they agree to let you do this episode about him? And she was like, we are getting calls all day from people wanting to be on the show. Like, we have to, you know, we're batting them off because it's people seeing the idea of somebody playing them on television is so enticing to people that the fact that someone is going to reenact their life is like worth it. Yeah, I'll look like an idiot on television.
God, that's so crazy. That's the pull, having someone play you. Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. There was a girl that worked at the bank that I used to go to when I was a kid, and she had her baby and threw it in the garbage and went back to work. She worked at a bank. No one knew she was pregnant. She was overweight. Went to the bathroom, had the baby, threw in the garbage, and went back to work. And then they figured out what the fuck happened and arrested her.
That's crazy.
Oh, it was so crazy. It was like I'd seen her eye to eye, person to person. I probably shook hands with her. I mean, I don't remember.
Like on the day?
I was 17. No, not on the day, don't think. I think I found out about it, like, you know, after the fact, but it was like the talk of the town.
Yeah.
It was like the I don't even remember her name, but, you know, I was like, I think I was probably 16 or so. I was working at Newport Creamery, which was a ice cream and hamburger joint in Newton, Massachusetts. So it was probably, I think I got that job when I was 16. So it was probably when I was 16 that all this happened. But it was just, the whole town was talking about it. I was like, what? She had a baby? She was pregnant? What? She put it in the garbage? Like, it was crazy. And she went to jail. And
yeah.
The whole thing was really creep people. It creeps you out when you find out that insanity like that was there the whole time. And you were interacting with insanity. Like, hello, insane person.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, crazy. You're about to have a baby and throw it in the trash, aren't you?
Yeah.
You know? Like, if you talked to her the week before, you're going to throw your baby in the trash? Is that what's going to happen?
Yeah.
What? Who are you? How do you know? She might not have even known she was pregnant, too. She might have been one of those people.
Oh, a lot of the people who, most of the people on the show who didn't know they were pregnant are overweight.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just, they must be in such discomfort all the time.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck, man.
I just don't understand.
You can't.
Yeah.
How can you? There's like, there's certain levels of madness. It's like there's a scale, you know? Like you could be like a little crazy. Well, I got this thing. I have to wear different color socks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have this thing. You know, I only wear my underwear backwards. You know, I have this thing. I like to be a mascot. I like to fuck other mascots and we get together. Like you can always get further and further down the crazy hole.
I have this thing. I don't think I'm pregnant, but if I ever am, I'm definitely throwing it in a dumpster.
Well, there was a bumper sticker once I saw on a car, like a cop car, that was like telling people they didn't have to throw their baby away and they could bring their baby to a fire department and drop the baby off or a police station. I was like, wait a minute. Who the fuck is like, I'm on my way to the dumpster with my baby. Oh, look at that bumper sticker. Oh, I could just go to the fire department?
I have options.
Oh, look at that. Yeah. What a great service the public is offering.
I've seen fire department things with a baby drop.
Like, oh God,
like
no.
Window. I mean, it's not like a blockbuster video, you know, but I mean, it's like, you know, it just says, I've seen the sign that says like, this is where you can leave an unwanted baby. So it must happen frequently enough that it's a regular thing that like people are like, okay, fire departments are places that we can do this.
Fuck, man. It's more evidence that there's groups of people when you get to like, when you have a city. You know, you have a million people or 5 million people or 10 million people, whatever it is, that when you get groups of people that aren't really interacting with their neighbors, don't really have real communities, they're not in real tribes, they're just sort of independent and wandering around. There's like madness all around us, which is like unrecognized, unchecked madness, ignored madness, you know, it's just all around us. We just don't. You know, you don't deal with it. Like if there's only 50 of us and we lived in the jungle together, you would know that bitch is pregnant. Damn.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
First of all, she wouldn't be fat because she would have to like gather food and everybody's thin.
It's a law.
It's a law? Yeah. How to drop off an unwanted baby with easy pictures. What?
Wow.
Safe haven law.
Safe Haven Law. You must drop them off at a police department, fire station, or any hospital. If a parent were to change their mind, they have 30 days after dropping off their infant to get their baby back from the state.
You have 30 days.
That makes me so sad.
That's crazy.
Imagine, like, on the 29th day, the 24th hour, you come in. I just want my baby back. Sorry, you just missed the cutoff.
Yeah.
It just, it's 30 days right now. Like, tick, tock. Hold on, I got
you
the baby.
You shouldn't give the baby back after one day. No. Like, you know, if you went to through the idea, if you're like, you know what, maybe I'm going to drop this baby off at the fire department.
So depressing.
You probably should drop the baby off at the fire department.
So depressing. It's so depressing. Imagine being that poor fucking kid, and you find out that your mom dropped you up at the fire department.
It's probably better.
Maybe. Yeah. Who knows?
But then the fucked up thing is that all the babies have to become firefighters. It's part of a...
Are you
like,
sure?
That's where firefighters come from. They've all been dropped.
I think they come from storks.
I could be wrong, but I think all firefighters are dropped off babies that grow up.
Fuck, man. You have to live in the firehouse.
Yeah.
Where's my toys? I don't want an axe.
You got the cool pole. You got the Dalmatian. Yeah, it's pretty good.
It's great if you're a stripper. You get early training. Fuck, man. God damn. What a weird world we live in, huh? There's too many of us. That's the only, or too many of us. I shouldn't say too many of us, because the cool thing about cities, the cool thing about large urban centers is you get a high concentration of intelligence, too. High concentration of cool people.
Mm-hmm.
High concentration of, like, things happening and things moving and progress. But there's too many of us that aren't in contact with each other, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's weird. Didn't, like, the population of the entire world stay somewhere around 1 billion for as long as we can, like, kind of, for a long time, like, you know, hundreds, maybe thousands of years. And then, like, once we invented, basically, once we figured out how to use fossil fuels and, like, plastics and things, it shot up to, like, 7 billion within, like, 100 years. You have more of a chance. I mean, there's more people now than there's ever been by, like, a huge long shot.
Huge. Yeah, there was a thing that I was listening to the other day that was talking about the population of the United States during World War II. And it was the 1940s, it was 150 million people or less.
Really?
Yeah. Now it's more than 300.
It's like 350.
Is it?
It's 350.
That's fucking crazy. And then the world population is much larger than that. The world population was, at the time, I think only like 2 billion, and now it's at 7.
Yeah.
Which is, like, stunning.
Yeah.
Just astronomical increase in human beings.
What was that, like 1 billion around, like, 1900 or something? So
was
it's
it?
Like, yeah.
The whole world.
Yeah. And so it's, like, doubled. It doubled in, like, 40 years, and now it's crazy.
Yeah.
A lot of people.
And that's what makes you wonder. But that's the other thing about the points to urbanization and to improvement of the quality of life is that apparently when the quality of life improves and there's more resources, people have less kids. And and also when the quality of life improves and resources improve, the people, how does it go? The people have less kids because their careers become more important. And they become more concerned with progress and with their career than they do with having a family. So they have families later and later.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things they also attribute to the increase in autism. I think there's a contributing factor, apparently, like several fold, is when you have children after a certain age. Like
for men, right?
Men and women.
Don't they think that it's linked to male sign?
That too. That, but women as well.
Yeah.
You know, women as they get older, like birth defects, the increase in birth defect issues. They didn't think it was men at all for a while, but now they do. Now they used to think it was just the age of the woman, but now they think it's the age of the men as well, the age of the sperm.
Because that's like going through the roof too. It's like something like 1 in 25 now or something like that.
Autism?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think they also think that that's also because they didn't
undiagnosed.
Didn't really know what was wrong with Billy, and now they've given it a name. Oh, he's got autism, or he's on the spectrum. He's got a spectrum disorder. He's got Asperger's and just fuck. Whatever, dude. What a great way to end this podcast.
We started out on AIDS, ended up on autism.
Dropping off babies at the hospital. Your special, dude. It was this past Friday?
Yeah. But it's available
What's it called?
High in church.
Did you ever get high in church?
Actually, I went to like a Christian school and stuff. So I was like, I never actually got high in church. There's a story about something that happened to my friend that I wrote the song about. But like, I've been high at like church basketball games and things like that.
Really?
It's always just, it's not, it's always
panicky. You grew up Christian?
Like, yeah, my parents were Christian rock singers in the 80s.
What?
Yeah.
Like Striper?
No, they were like folk, and then it became rock kind of thing. But so I grew up on a tour bus traveling around the country.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
So,
dude.
Yeah, I went to a really, really conservative high school and, you know, stuff.
Wow. That's weird. How did you break free?
I don't know. Well, I think it's when something is around a lot. You know, you're kind of just, you know, as a kid growing up, you're kind of just like, okay, does everything have to be about, you know, church, that kind of thing? Like,
right.
So you just sort of, you know, so then like when I was in school, it was always me and like two or three of the other quote unquote bad kids that would be at the back of the class, just like not taking things seriously and kind of making fun of everybody kind of thing. So it was just kind of like that, you know.
Praise God. Praise God for people like you. Yeah, but that often happens, right? I mean, Cara Santa Maria, who's a friend of mine, who's a beautiful, intelligent neuroscientist who grew up with a strict religious household. Mm-hmm. Now she's a devout atheist, and you know her parents don't like her because of that, and they're upset at her because she's an atheist and has metal in her face and like, lip ring and shit. But that's oftentimes the case, right? Your parents are pushing a certain direction, and you rebound and go crazy.
Yeah, well, I mean, the kids that I would hang out with were like other pastors' kids, you know. They were the kids in the back that weren't like taking things seriously.
Yeah, they get tired of their parents telling them what to do.
Yeah.
If you restrict your kids too much, it's like what I was saying about my daughter with the soccer shit. Like, you don't make them do anything, man.
Yeah.
Don't make them do things, you know.
You want your kid to not play piano? Force them to play piano.
Fuck yeah, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, sometimes it works, but God. The amount of resentment that children have from really, like, overbearing parents.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a kid, I dated this girl that went to Catholic school. And her parents were, like, super strict Catholics. And she was the biggest hoe bag because of that. Like, that girl probably fucked everyone who asked her.
Yeah.
Like, or everyone who wanted to.
Take
like,
that, daddy.
Up until the time she was probably like 30.
Mm-hmm.
She's went on a rampage. Like there was like a long list of people that I knew that fucked her. It was crazy. At a certain point in time, by the time we were like 19 or 20, like I dated her when I guess we were like 16. And by the time we were like 19, 20, I knew like a dozen dudes that had fucked her. It was just chaos.
Just chaos.
Girl was just fucking everybody. And she was really pretty too. So like everybody wanted to fuck her. So Just all that suppression, like her parents were so overbearing, just so constantly drilling Jesus into her head and the Catholic guilt, and she just couldn't wait to just finger herself and just start sucking dick and just run around, and you know, she would get so drunk that she would just throw up and pass out, and she was out of fucking control, and a lot of it was just her parents. They just wound that spring up so tight. Shot to the fucking moon. It's weird how that works, right? Were your parents overbearing about it?
It was strict, but it was like also not strict in weird ways. Like, you know, I couldn't watch most stuff on television.
Like what was forbidden? Like Dukes of Hazzard?
No, like anything that had like more than one swear word. Like, I couldn't watch. So I'd watch The Simpsons, and then it'd be like, they'd say damn something, and I'd be like, oh, and my parents would be like, all right, one more, and it's off. And then, like, and I'd be like, oh, God, please don't let Bart Simpson say damn again.
No, then, damn was a swear word?
Yeah, damn is a swear word. Wow. And then I wasn't allowed to watch R-rated movies. So still to this day, like, you know, there's all these great movies that, you know, came out in, like, the 90s that I just didn't really see.
Stripes?
Never seen Stripes. But, like, I remember, like, like when I was in my early 20s, like my girlfriend realized that I'd never seen any Terminators. Like, she was like, you haven't seen any Terminators? I'm like, nah, I just never saw any of them. Like, and she was like, you have to watch the Terminators, like that. So we watched all three of them like that. And
binge Terminator.
Yeah, I watched all three Terminators. She's like, what'd you think? I was like, I like the third one the best. And she's like, you're crazy. She's like, but I didn't have the nostalgia. Like,
right.
So I just watched them all at once. I was like, no, I liked how they blew the world up at the end. I thought that was cool. She's like, no. And I was like, the lady Terminator? She was cool. And I was like, no. It's the second Terminator is the one.
The second is the one?
That's what she was saying. Yeah.
Oh, I thought the first was the one. No? The first one has really shitty special effects. Try to watch it today on Blu-ray, and you'll go, what the fuck is that? What am I looking? That's not Arnold Schwarzenegger. That thing's made out of silly putty. God. So are your parents, they're still around?
Yeah.
Are they still, like, super Jesused out?
Yeah, they don't perform anymore, but they're, like, my mom's a teacher, and my dad's a graphic designer and stuff.
Really?
Yeah. But,
wow.
Yeah.
That's wild, man. So what do they think about, like, you and what you do?
They don't like it. my relationship is fine with them.
Would they ever sit you down? Trevor.
No, but they would.
Why, Trevor?
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, they don't like the material or the things that I talk about or, like, what my, comedy is usually about. On the other side of that coin, they're happy that, things are going well. They're happy that, that it's like a weird, we kind of try not to talk about like the stuff. Like when the special came out, I was like, I waited until pretty much the end to tell them, like, yeah, it's called High in Church. they were talking about, oh, we're excited for your special. Like, we're going to go over and meet, with some of our friends and we're going to watch it when it comes out. And they're like, is it something that we should watch? I'm like, no, you probably shouldn't watch it. I was like, there's like one song you can probably watch. I'll send you.
It's called High in Church. Yeah. Oh, that's so funny. Oh my God. Did they ever have a sit down with you? Like an intervention?
No. I mean, it was more of like just phone arguments, kind of. I did a song about the Pope called The Pope Rap. And I knew it was about to come out. It was for my last album. And so I went home for Christmas one year and I'd already shot the music video for it. And I was like, well, I might as well. I was like, you know what I'll do? I'll just kind of nip this in the bud. Like, I'll kind of show this to them while I'm here. I can answer any questions about it. Like, so it's not like they see it. It was a bad idea because, like, ruined Christmas. It was a big, like, fight. And so now I've learned from that. I'm like, just don't watch it.
What was their argument? What did they say to you?
Well, it's just like, why would you? Oh, you know what it is? I mean, you know what it is? It's like, I think a lot of, they think that it's a personal, or they used to think that it was a personal affront to them. And it's not.
Like you were rebelling
against
mocking
them specifically, or mocking because they were Christian musicians. And I could see them thinking that. But it's like what I kind of had to explain is like, a lot of my comedy comes is about religion, history, and politics. But that's because that's where I grew up. I grew up on like a Civil War battlefield in Virginia. Like I'd go out with my grandfather and we would like, find cannonballs with metal detectors and like you would dig them up and stuff.
Really?
Like, it's just history was everywhere. My uncles were Civil War reenactors, it was like a big history. It was like a big thing.
What side were they reenacting? Both sides?
No, they were Confederates. It was Virginia.
like, South's going to do it again.
Yeah.
When they did that, like, what did they do? They just put the outfits on and shit?
Oh, and there'd be hundreds of people. I mean, it would be like, they reenact whole battles. Like,
Now, when you say reenact, do they use, like, muskets with no balls
in them? Yeah, just flash powder.
Oh,
and they all walk across the field.
Fucking hilarious.
And then all the women come and they dress up at the time. They kind of cheer everybody on. It was like a weird, yeah.
Oh, my God. That must be awesome.
Yeah. Well, I was born in New York, and I came down. And all of my family like lived in Virginia, and so like everyone like when I was a kid, everybody would play Civil War, and like all of my cousins had like Civil War outfits, and I was the only Yankee, so I get my ass kicked all the time, and I was always like, that's not how it happened. This is not how the war like panned out. Like
that's hilarious. You'd have to get your ass kicked. So they wanted the South to win all the wars.
Oh well, I mean, I think.
Did they ever allow like the South to lose? Because you're reenacting the war.
No. And the reenactments are one thing. I'm talking about when I was playing with my cousins.
Oh,
like
I
that.
See.
No. They did it authentically to like how the battles would actually play out.
But
it's very unorganized. Like it's people just running around and you're shooting. And then I guess when you run out, you like fake death and you like die. and then you kind of lay on the ground for the rest of the battle.
What is the fucking motivation to do that? I don't have there any other. They don't reenact World War II. They don't. No one storms the beach of Normandy again.
Well,
right?
We have both sides here, and all the battlefields are here.
Oh, okay. That
so,
makes sense.
You know, we it's can easy. Actually, yeah, you could do it on, you can go to Gettysburg. It's a, you know, it's a couple hour drive for most people, you know.
My stepdad went and he said it was really depressing. He said, I've never felt sadness in a location before. He said,
Gettysburg.
I was there. He goes, you could feel it. Like, you feel the fact that all those people died there, if that makes any sense at all.
No, it's a dark place.
And he's not a woo woo guy. He's pretty straightforward guy. Mm-hmm. So when he told me that, I was like, wow, really?
Yeah.
Like, you could feel it?
I'll bet Normandy is like that. You go there, I bet there's a heavy pall, you know?
Oh, I'd imagine. There was somebody who did something on Normandy where they did, they made like sand images of all of the bodies, like the thousand that represent the thousands of people that died on that beach. And it was really creepy. Because you looked, I think it's important, like, for people to understand the actual loss of life that you're dealing with.
Yeah.
But when this guy did it, he was like an artist. There it is.
Wow.
That's, and those things that are there, are those things from the war that are still there? Is that what that is? Those black things? Yeah. Is that what those are? I think they are. I think that's what that is.
When are they going to clean that up?
I might be wrong. They're never going to clean it up. But look at what that represents.
That's crazy.
Imagine being there and seeing all those fucking bodies in real time. I mean, these people were showing up in boats, and as they're getting out of the boats, they're just getting shot at. Bop, 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 bop.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, that's the mind-blowing thing about, or I guess, big battles and wars. I mean, you go to, like, basic training, you spend all this time, like, preparing, and then you get dropped into something like that. I mean, how much of it is, I mean, it's like, it's, I guess it's why you hear all those, whenever you, you know, hear an interview with like a war veteran, they're like, you know, I'm not a hero. The real heroes are the people that, you know, die that day. I mean, it's just like, it's just luck. You know, yeah. You're just like one of the people that got through and like, you know, I mean, it's just.
That opening scene in Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah.
The opening scene when everyone's getting blown up in front of them.
That's intense.
Jesus fucking Christ. That's real, man. That's the real war.
Yeah.
You know, that was one of the things about that Brian Williams thing that I found particularly disturbing. When Brian Williams got caught not telling the truth about his helicopter getting shot at, what was interesting to me was not just that this fucking news guy lied, but that the pilot of the helicopter that he was on was telling his version of the story because they had interviewed him, and he said, well, Our helicopter did get hit with small arms fire, and the helicopter in front of us was the one that got hit by the RPG, and then we had to land, and we had to drop off our load first, and that's why we were an hour behind them, but we were all in the same convoy. So he's telling the story. He's essentially like letting Brian Williams off the hook a little bit, because he was saying, like, well, we did get hit. You know, we got hit. You know, we were being attacked. Like, there's no doubt about it. And then a lot of people were like, well, why would he lie about that? Because the lie, it doesn't make him look any better. Like, you were in a war, you were getting attacked, you did have to land, you did take small arms fire, and you were stuck in a sandstorm for two days. So that's
a fine story.
It's a fucking crazy story. Yeah. Just the sandstorm, just watching another helicopter in front of you get hit with an RPG. But then the guy said that he got calls from all these other people that were saying, no, you didn't have Brian Williams in your helicopter. This guy did, or that guy did. And there was like more than one story emerging of different people saying that they had Brian Williams in his helicopter. And then he said, you know what? I might be wrong. I don't even want to talk about this anymore because I've been doing these interviews about this. Now all the nightmares are coming back.
Oh, wow.
He's like, I had tried to put this aside, and it put in my mind, it made me really think about getting over traumatic situations like that, and how much of the truth of the, you know, we're talking about like 12 plus years ago, how much of the truth do you retain in your memory, and how much of it is just really, really confusing and fucked up because it's just bullets and chaos and nightmares and dead bodies, and who knows how many times that guy saw somebody die, and then they're asking him to recall a very specific instance where one very specific, unremarkable at the time, news guy was with him.
Yeah.
Unremarkable at the time because nothing happened other than this news guy was there. He probably took a bunch of different people.
Yeah.
Who knows?
He's not excited that Brian Williams is in his helicopter. He doesn't care.
The crazy thing is he's in war and he's getting shot at and he's all PTSD'd out. And so, you know, he said, you know, respectfully, I don't want to talk about this anymore just because of my memories. Like, it's really fucking me up. And all these things that I had tried to forget, now I'm being forced to remember them again. And my memory might be fucked up.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, that's something to consider, that memories are not carved in stone. They're just not.
And they change. I mean, they're almost hardly used in courts. You know, eyewitness stuff, like, because it's like, it's, you change, you know, embellishment, like, you know, you always tell, I mean, I always, like, you know, tell a story, and then somebody, you know, from like 10 years ago, and somebody be like, that's not what happened, it happened like this, and then you're like, oh, yeah, you're right, it did, it's just kind of, it's changed, and you see it a certain way, like, it can just, like, small things, but you're like, oh, I guess that was this person, in my mind, I remember it being this other person that was there. But I guess that person wasn't there, like, you know, kind of.
And then you have to go, well, are you sure you got it right?
Right. It's like,
I remember some things very clearly. Very clearly, because I kind of told the story more than once, and the points in the story that were specific were very important. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's some other stories that are just fucking loosely pieced together, flashes in my brain, like just images that I can kind of recall, kind of. And chain of events that I can kind of recall correctly.
Yeah.
But some people are married to the idea that they remember everything exactly how it happened.
Nobody does, I don't think. It's the weird thing is, like, when you tell a story or, like, something, say, something crazy happens in college, and it's a story right out the gate, you know, kind of thing. And you're telling that story, and you tell that story for years and years and years. And then at a certain point, you don't really remember the actual event anymore, but you remember the story. You've been telling the story forever. Like, so someone would be like, remember when this happened? You're like, no, but I do remember the story. You know, I remember it happened, but I have no memory of it anymore, really.
And then some people remember shit that you don't remember at all. And they're like, come on, man. You don't remember? We did that thing together. You're like, I don't even know what the fuck you're talking about. Like, is this guy crazy? Or do I just not have a memory of an actual event? Like, which one is this? I'll tell you what I'm going to remember, Trevor Moore.
What?
This podcast.
Me too. Smoking is good for your memory, too.
Yes, I heard.
Nicotine.
I think we're out of time. We're going to turn into a pumpkin any minute now. Trevor Moore. The letter I, Trevor Moore, on Twitter, website.
TrevorMoore.org.
High in Church. You can get it on Comedy Central Direct. Is it one of those $5 jammies?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yep.
How nice is that? Louis C.K. set the fucking model.
Yeah.
And we all follow. That's it. Dude, thank you very much. Let's do this again.
Thanks
for
having me.
This was a lot
of fun. This was a blast.
Again. We will do it again.
All right.
And again.
Awesome.
And then we'll have false memories about the podcast we did. All right, my friends. See you soon. Much love.